Steve, I don't know what happened with the traffic. All the buttons are pressed. It's me, Bill Leff. I'll explain briefly. Wendy, who's normally running the board, is out today. She's got the day off, so I'm running the board. And Las Vegas oddmakers have the mistakes count. The over-under on my mistakes count is 14.
Yeah, but this one clearly wasn't yours because all the buttons are pressed.
Every button... I know people can't see because it's radio.
Do you have it into the B? It's B selector or A?
B selector is on. And then we tried A. Kevin and I said maybe we'll try A and see what happens, and nothing happened there.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm afraid it was Jaligan we were supposed to go to. Now I'm afraid for her.
Well, let's get it from Dave Ennett. He can do the traffic.
Dave, some traffic.
Right now on the inbound Kennedy, it's
he was cruising
slow
there for a minute.
Yeah.
It started great, Dave.
Yeah.
It really did. All right, well, at some point, there will be a traffic report. I can guarantee. I don't know when, I don't know where, but you will have traffic. There's also a lot of press conferences scheduled for today.
There are a lot.
Some of those will have some traffic elements to them.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised. All right, welcome to the show. It's Monday. Don't let the shaky start fool you. Everything's in place. We're going to have a great time today. We have all kinds of things planned for you. Noted pet expert Steve Dale later on. Our friend Eric Zorn, the author of a great pop culture book, will be in. We've got all kinds of stuff, so thanks for being here. I've asked Dave to stick around for a couple of reasons. Number one, Patrick Kane did something monumental last night. He broke a Blackhawks record, and a very, very big Blackhawks record.
Mm-hmm.
Please explain.
Well, he extended his streak of games with at least 1 point to 22 in a row.
Mm-hmm.
The previous record, 21 in a row, set by Bobby Hull in the 1971-72 season. And he did it rather dramatically because it was the final 2 minutes of the game, a minute 46 to be exact, when he basically swatted the puck out of the air and sent it to Artemi Panarin, who had an open net at the other end, and scored the empty net goal, and that gave Kane an assist and a new record with the streak now at 22 in a row.
Dave, I was listening to that part of the game. I saw the first part of the game, but I was in the car and had it on. Mm-hmm. I wasn't made aware until I watched the video this morning that this swatting of the puck that Patrick Kane did was way deep into the Blackhawks zone.
Correct.
Wasn't anywhere near the other goal. It was
correct.
It was very close. So the guys on the radio were kind of debating whether or not that would be counted as an assist. It was counted as an assist.
It was counted as an assist.
But they were saying they were trying to figure out if an assist has to come off your stick or if an assist can come off, like we saw yesterday, of him just quickly swatting it down.
You know, I've never really heard that question come up before. A hand pass is legal if you're in the defensive zone.
Yeah.
And how many times does that happen where a guy then will carry the puck in, fires it in, and scores?
Almost never.
I mean, I don't remember ever seeing it. It's a pretty rare way.
Yeah.
And that's why you think this streak likely will continue. Because if you extend the streak on something like that, then you got to figure that there's going to be some more routine points coming Kane's way in the next few games.
Fate seems to be on Patrick Kane's side
so
a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing that you have to think about is this brings the streak up to 22, correct?
22.
The leader, Wayne Gretzky, and they kind of had some fun with this yesterday at the end of the game, his streak, his all-time streak, is 51.
51.
That seems unbelievable, doesn't it? To have 51 straight games with either a goal or an assist.
It does, but if you consider that the Blackhawks have played what now? They've played 27 games, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah.
They're 14-9-4. They've played 27 games. So, let's see. They're just past a quarter way through the season.
Right.
And Patrick Kane has a point in all but two games they have played so far. 25 of the 27 games. You just don't write this off that he can at least make a run or keep it going a while longer. Mathematically, you would think the odds are slim that he's going to even come close to that 51. That seems like one of those records that's out there and it's just never going to be equaled.
Yeah.
But at least this could go on a while longer, I think.
It's fun to watch. He's really having an amazing season.
It really is.
The other guy that it was so good to see back in a Blackhawks uniform was Brian Bickle,
mm-hmm.
who really came out swinging. That guy was hitting everybody.
Delivered some hits. And
five hits in the first period.
Yeah, and that's what you want.
Yeah.
He said that he kind of found his game again at Rockford. So let's hope that's true because it was a good opportunity for him. They need him.
Yeah. Yeah. When they sent him down, the message was, and he was struggling a little bit. I mean, he was still being productive, but he wasn't up to usual Brian Bickle standards. But now, all of a sudden, I know it's only been one game, but he seemed to have a purpose again, which is what you were hoping for.
Certainly hoping for that. And look, we've seen, and we certainly saw in that tremendous playoff run, what Brian Bickle can mean to this team. And they need that.
Yeah.
And so I think they'll give him every opportunity now to stay here and continue to play the way they know he's capable of and see what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all good for the Blackhawks, though, if he can play like that.
Now, I hate to bring this up. This is salt in the wounds at this point, but the Bears played yesterday, and when I say played, I use the term extremely loosely. They were at a game. they were involved in a game that didn't end very well.
No, it did not.
No.
No.
I said, and I'm not gloating when I say this, but after the first game of the season, I said to myself, I can't put myself emotionally through another Bears season. I'm checking out. However, yesterday, my wife and I were godparents to one of our nephews yesterday. So we went to the service, we acted as godparents, and then we were at a reception after? I don't know. We were at the big party afterwards, mm-hmm. and the game was on, so I watched all of the fourth quarter and the overtime, and it was reminiscent of the reason I have a hard time watching the Bears. Every element that makes me not want to watch them was displayed prominently in that fourth quarter plus.
Well, look, it was very frustrating, and I get that, and I think everybody understands that. The Bears win at Green Bay was a huge win, signature win.
Right.
Now they're playing a team that's 3-8, probably the worst team in the National Football Conference.
Yeah.
They're playing them at home.
Yeah.
Everything seemed to point towards – plus they had 10 days to get ready for
it. Right.
So everything seems to point to a Bears blowout win. I don't think people thought – I mean, I thought they'd win by a couple of touchdowns. Actually, I think I picked them – 27-10.
Did
Hampton
you?
Picked them to win 28-10. I think Cochran had them like 16-3 or something. Adam Hogue was on with us. He said he didn't think they'd score a touchdown or San Francisco would score a touchdown. So here's the thing. I don't think the Bears are as good a team as they showed with the victory at Green Bay. And they weren't perfect in that game, but their defense made a great stand at the end of the game. They got the big plays when they needed to in that game. I still think that, you know, Green Bay is a better team, right?
Right.
I don't think that's going out on a limb to say that.
Right.
I think the Bears are still, I would like to think the Bears are a better team than San Francisco. Sometimes you're not going to play a great game. And,
sure.
And the thing that separates good teams from lesser teams is the ability to step up in those kinds of moments and make big plays and avoid the big mistakes that kill you, whether it's a crucial penalty on a kickoff return or a punt return or just a drop pass or an interception, whatever it is.
Right.
And the Bears aren't at the point yet where they can avoid those kinds of mistakes. And so I don't think they're as bad as they played yesterday, and I'm not sure they're a good enough team to consistently beat Green Bay. They're probably somewhere in between.
So they're not as good as we think they are, but they're not as bad as we think.
I think they're
better.
I think they are better than they were last year.
Yeah.
The problem is now they lose a game, and I made this comparison this morning with Adam, that last year Miami came in here, and they had trouble winning on the road, and they were a sub-500 team, and the Bears were coming off a win on the road in Atlanta, in which I think Jay Cutler threw for 380 yards, and everybody was all fired up about that game, and they lost. And I think that this game had the same kind of feel to it. It's a game you're expected to win, and you don't get it done. And the way you lose is really painful. If you remember, that Miami game was the game where afterwards Brandon Marshall went into the whole unacceptable rant.
I do remember.
After the game.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this was that kind of a game.
Do the Bears lead the NFC or all of the NFL in frustrating losses? They do, because they've lost a couple of games, a handful of games, just by a couple of points where you go, boy, if they had just done this.
Well, they lose at home on a field goal in the last play by Minnesota.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Who got creamed yesterday,
But keep in mind also that they won back-to-back games by, let's see, they won by 2 points and then by 1 point
mm-hmm.
against in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
They won by 3 at San Diego. You know, so it's not like they haven't won their share of close ones, too.
Right.
But, yeah, you're right. I mean, they were leading at halftime in the first game with Green Bay in the season opener, ended up losing by a touchdown. You know, they got blown out by Arizona in week 2 and then by Seattle in week 3 without Cutler. Other than that, they've been in every game. They had an overtime loss at
right.
Detroit. So, I mean, this is maybe that's what you have to go through in sort of a transitional year where you're trying to get from where you were to where you hope to be, and they're just not there yet.
What about Robbie Gould, though? So consistent, one of the most consistent kickers, especially with field goals in the whole NFL, and
right.
they just can't seem to get it done.
And he said, look, you know, it's on him.
Yeah.
36 yards. I mean, that's right in his wheelhouse.
Right.
And he doesn't miss those, or he traditionally doesn't miss those. He missed a couple yesterday, but the Bears had ample opportunity to not let it come down to a Robbie Gould field goal.
Sure.
In the final. But you know, that doesn't take him off the hook, and he didn't take himself off the hook after the game. He said, look, that's on me. But remember, he's the guy who said, "I'm like, you know, just like Michael Jordan wanted the ball at the end of the game.
Right.
He wants to be in those situations. But they had so many chances, Bill.
I mean, they did.
Gosh.
They really did.
And then you let a guy who is playing quarterback in San Francisco after
Kaepernick is sat down.
They sat Kaepernick and Blaine Gabbert. You let him run 44 yards for a touchdown untouched.
Yeah.
With a minute 40 to go.
That hurts.
I mean,
do you think the Bears will fire Superintendent Gary McCarthy?
I do not.
You do not?
I do not.
He's safe with that.
I think that's good. Already been taken care of.
Well, that's good news anyway. So so something of an up and down day yesterday in the world of sports here in Chicago. Would you agree with me?
What else? Let's see. What else happened?
Northwestern got a nice bowl bid.
They got a nice
that's
bowl
excellent.
Bid.
That's excellent. That's good news.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just at least the Blackhawks came through.
Right.
And it's unusual where the Bears game ends and within a half hour the Blackhawks are playing.
Right.
And that's the way normally Bears game would end around 3. The Hawks play around 6 usually on Sundays for their home games. And so there wasn't a lot of downtime to really wallow in the loss.
It made for a lot of fun sports. It really
That's
did.
Right.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate
okay.
it. All kinds of things coming up on today's show. We're thrilled that you're here. Stick around. It's Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder has the day off, and it's WGN. It's me. It's Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder has the day off. She should be in tomorrow. Steve, she should be in tomorrow. A lot going on this weekend. Kevin did something. Now, Kevin, you were worried about this. You and I spoke about this on Friday because this was a new experience for you, and I hope it went well. Tell everybody what you did over the weekend.
I went to the ballet.
Went to the ballet, Steve.
He walked into the newsroom this morning dancing like that Russian guy in the Nutcracker.
Yeah, it's a work in progress, but I'm getting there.
Now, you had never been to the ballet before any capacity.
I think like maybe when I was 3, you know, very young, and I had gone and seen the Nutcracker. But
yeah,
this was a totally new experience for me. And yeah, I loved it. I really
Why
did.
Were you so nervous about attending the ballet? Because it sounds kind of uppity, kind of richy?
Yeah, well, I don't want to say that, but just I wasn't sure if it was going to be something I was going to be interested in, if it was going to keep me engaged for a full 2 hours.
Now, was this the Nutcracker on ice?
No, there was no ice involved.
Oh, okay.
There was zero ice.
Were you disappointed by that?
Well, I was hoping for a little more ice.
Sure, this time
Steve
of year.
Mentions it, yeah.
And you said to me, and Steve, I thought this was beautiful from somebody. Now, I don't go to the ballet very often, but my mom was a ballet teacher, so I had some sort of, I was exposed to the ballet more than once.
Mm-hmm.
You were surprised at the number of songs that you recognized
in
the
Nutcracker. Oh, my God. Well, it was like so many iconic Christmas songs. I had an idea that there would be a few, but it was like.
You knew them all, didn't
every
you?
Every song, pretty much, yeah.
Did
absolutely.
You sing along at all?
Well, I tried to.
I
learned that that's frowned upon, actually. But true story, Sarah did get in trouble for trying to take a photo inside the theater.
They're serious about that.
They don't like that. Yeah.
No. Not at the ballet, not at the opera.
It was just one innocent selfie, you know, of her and the Nutcracker. Not a
now that you have attended the ballet and you came away humming the music, enjoying the experience, do you think that this will become a regular thing for you?
I think I would like to see Nutcracker every year, yeah.
Would you see it every year,
absolutely.
The same ballet? You wouldn't try new ballets?
I'll definitely try new ones,
there
too.
Are other ballets out there.
Thousands
of
them.
Are you just the ballet expert, Steve?
No, but I know that much.
Do they all have nutcrackers in them, though?
Nope.
No, that's
they all have tight tights for the most part.
They do wear tight tights. But if you're looking for a ballet that features nutcrackers prominently, I would say your best bet would be the nutcracker.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That's your best bet.
I think I might check out some of the other, you know.
Like what? What do you have a hankering to see now that you've
seen one with the swans?
Swan Lake?
Swan Lake. There's the Spandau one.
The Spandau ballet.
Yeah, I've heard that's a good one.
I know that much is true. So you got a couple of options right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, so, you know, anything with, you know, tight pants and tutus, I'm in.
Can I? My guess is when this was presented, this was the dream child of your fiance. You probably didn't come up with this.
What gives you that idea?
This was her probably
yeah,
idea.
Yeah, no, it was absolutely her idea.
And were you, like, did you do the thing where you pretended, oh, finally you and I get to see a ballet, or did you
I was wait, you're into ballet? How have we never talked about this?
Did she use the phrase new tradition?
I think she did, actually. Honestly, I think she did.
But really, when you sit down and you're watching it, you forget that it's one of those things that you go, oh, no, am I ever going to have to sit through about? Like, you find yourself really enjoying it,
yeah,
don't
no,
you?
I absolutely had a great time. And I saw Craig Collins there, too.
The one of the producers
yeah,
here at WGN.
WGN was well represented.
Well, he's what they call a theater swell.
And his tights looked great on him.
Yeah, he always dresses.
He's got nice thighs.
He dresses like they do for Rocky Horror Picture Show. If he's going to a ballet, he dresses the part.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were nervous. Speaking of dressing, you said to me, what does somebody wear to the ballet? What did you end up wearing?
Well, Sarah suggested that I wear a full suit. And I was thinking, I don't know if I want to do that. And there were some people that were wearing suits and all that. Mm-hmm. But I just wore, you know, a dress shirt and some dress pants and a nice pair of shoes and all that.
By the way,
so
Steve
you did go with the shoes.
I did wear shoes to the ballet, yeah.
Steve Alexander said he wants his theater glasses back. He's adamant.
Those aren't even his. He got them from Orion.
He bought them from Orion. But if you don't have them back to him by noon, he loses his deposit. So you got to get those theater glasses back to
him. All right, sorry.
All right, promise?
Sorry.
All right. Stick around. We have a lot coming up on today's show. We're thrilled that you're here. It's Phil Leff. Wendy's taking the day off, and it's WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder has the day off. I hold in my hand a book that's just plain fun. That's all that it is. It's called Luke Skywalker Can't Read and Other Geeky Truths. It's been written by Ryan Britt, who's got a pretty big resume. He's written for the New York Times, for Vice, for the Morning News. He's a contributor over at Tor.com. That's the Hugo Award-winning web magazine. This book is fun, Ryan. You can't escape it.
Well, thanks. That's a really nice thing to say, Bill.
Really nice.
I hope it's fun.
I want to start out, since the title has the name Luke Skywalker, let's take the Star Wars angle at first. We're 10 days away from the new Star Wars movie. As a self-proclaimed geek, and I am one as well, this is big news, isn't it? This is exciting.
Gosh, is it only 10 days?
10 more days.
Are we already to 10 days? That's
yep.
amazing.
Yep.
yeah, it's exciting. It's surreal, I think. You know, I've been writing about science fiction and fantasy professionally for, you know, about a little over 6 years. And so I think that both as a job thing and as a fan, I almost don't know what to say until I see it, you know?
Now, are you like many of us, and you know, this has been debated back and forth for a long time, Ryan, but many of us believe that those first three Star Wars movies were masterpieces and the second three were really not up to par?
Yeah, you know, shockingly, I have complicated opinions about that.
Yeah.
I think that something that I say in my book is the funny thing about, you know, The Empire Strikes Back is that it was a miracle at the time that it was made, because it was a sequel that was better than the original.
Yeah.
Right. But it's a masterpiece now.
Yeah.
You know? But in 1980, it was just kind of a miracle that it was as good as it was. I think that any sequels or continuations of a great film or an idea, when they're good at all, is sort of like a huge relief. In regard to the prequel films from 99, 2002, and 2005, you know, I've lightened up on those as I've gotten a little
older.
Have
you? Yeah.
A lot of my friends have kids, you know, and young kids. You know, my friend's got a 7-year-old, and she is really excited about The Force Awakens, but she loved The Phantom Menace, you know, because she loved Natalie Portman in those. So I feel like I've lightened up a bit because I'm getting older.
Oh, maybe. You know? I felt, and you tell me what your feelings are, but all the fun and adventure of those first three just seemed to evaporate in the last three.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that the there's not a lot of wit.
Yeah.
I think that what people always kind of, you know, and this is true of all great adventure fiction, is that there's always a lot of wit.
Yep.
Star Wars has a tremendous amount of wit. Sherlock Holmes has a tremendous amount of humor in it. The classic 60s Star Trek was extremely funny. And so, yeah, I would agree with you that the wit was definitely lacking in the prequel films.
Now, Ryan, you're implying in the book, in Luke Skywalker Can't Read and Other Geeky Truths, that some members, if not all members of the Star Wars universe, have some problems with literacy.
Yeah. Well, it's just, if you take a cursory glance on the amount of information they seem to be able to retain about basic current events, there seems to be a journalism gap. You know, then you kind of start extending that out to what the media is. You know, there's that great Marshall McLuhan axiom that gets quoted all the time. You know, the medium is the message. Well, in Star Wars, the medium is audiovisual. It's all video chat holograms. You know, no one texts really. And when they do, it's very task-oriented. It's connected to something they're specifically doing, Luke flying a spaceship, somebody pressing a button to fire a giant death blast from a evil space station. So I think that you've got a functional illiteracy. Not a lot of people seem to be writing things down. And I imagine that, kind of impoverished people, like the way when we find Luke in that first film, are probably not, it's not a priority.
Right.
You know, it's kind of just, so I thought all of this was very interesting in Star Wars, but also just as a larger kind of, analogy. I was told that the emoji, or the crying emoji, was the word of the year for Oxford. Mm-hmm. And I think that the essay Luke Skywalker Can't Read is kind of about that.
Ryan, you could also, if you want to further this along, you could also say that there's some engineering flaws along with the reading. For instance, if you're building a Death Star, the one thing you might want to do is not have a panel where if you touch it, the whole thing explodes.
Well, luckily, I am trained as a writer and not as an engineer.
Okay, that's fair.
So I theorize on the language aspects. But yeah, of course, I agree with you. I mean, it does seem, this is the classic sort of, plot holes that are more glaring, but I wonder about why, basic ATMs are structured the way they are sometimes. So it's not conceivable that if you wanted to build a Death Star, it presumes that you're an insane person anyway.
Right. Right.
So,
well, just the name alone, if you go to a bank and say, I need to raise a certain amount of money because I'm building a Death Star, they would look at you like, the name is kind of a problem.
There's a joke out there somewhere that's not mine that somebody wrote something about how they were saying, they really should have called it something else. They should have called it like the liberating station.
Right.
But, again, if nobody's reading any news reports and nobody's writing anything down, they can call it whatever the hell they want.
But just in telling people, like, you go, hey, is your son working? Is Jim working? Yeah, he got a job over on the Death Star. You go, oh, that's so sad. The name is so sad. Do you agree with me on this, Ryan? When you go back and watch those original movies, there's a weird kind of an incestuous feel to the Luke and Leia relationship. There's some weird kissing going on. There's some weird googly eyes that at first we didn't really notice them. But when you go back in retrospect and look at it, there's an uncomfortable moment or two.
Yeah, well, there's an essay in the last essay in my book is called The Fans Awaken. And I kind of try to write about how George Lucas has been kind of making things up as he went along, even in the classic films. Mm-hmm. I don't think that there's any reason to believe that he had always planned for Leia to be Luke's sister. It seems to be a very convenient way of eliminating a love triangle in that third film, but I don't really think it was planned. And if you dig a little bit in some of the early scripts for The Empire Strikes Back, it seems like it definitely wasn't planned. When Luke is told that Darth Vader is his father, he screams and almost commits suicide. And when he casually reveals it to his sister that Darth Vader is also, in fact, her father, she's just kind of like, that was the break.
Right. Bad stuff happens. What can you do?
Yeah. I think it was a rush to kind of wrap up plot points. Obviously, I love it. But I think that it was kind of like, okay, how are we going to sort all this out and put everybody where we want them to be?
I always had a theory that George Lucas was a fan of All My Children, because that's the kind of thing on All My Children they would reveal that one character was another character's sister or brother or uncle or cousin. And I think Lucas went, I can make that work in a sci-fi realm. Why not?
I want to steal that observation from you. That's so brilliant.
All yours.
that's so good.
It's all yours.
I think that's right. I think that it's the need for some kind of new reveal that's almost like a soap opera.
Can you stick around, Ryan? Are you okay on time? Because there's other things. There's plenty of other things in Luke Skywalker Can't Read. Other non-Star Wars related stories I want to get to. Are you all right on time?
I'm okay on time. Yeah, I've got like another 15 minutes.
Stay where you are. More with Ryan Britt, Luke Skywalker Can't Read, and other geeky truths. If you have a question or a comment, we're at 312-981-7200. More after this. It's Bill Leff on WGN. It's Bill Leff with you. Wendy Snyder has the day off. My guest is Ryan Britt. Ryan has written a great book, Luke Skywalker Can't Read and Other Geeky Truths. Ryan, a quick question. When did it become okay, acceptable to become a geek? When did that become a good thing?
I guess 1977 when Star Wars came out.
That's it, isn't it?
My mom thinks so anyway. I was talking to my mom on the phone the other day, kind of for an essay I was writing about the kind of the current hype, and she was 26 when the original Star Wars film came out, so she was regaling me kind of with what that hype was like. And her my dad and her were huge Star Trek fans before that, so I think that they were sort of like closeted with that.
Sure.
And then I think the 70s and the 80s in general mainstreamed these things, if in the cinema, if not anywhere else.
Well, isn't it funny how the fans of those shows like Star Trek or Doctor Who and several others, it was a cult, but then all of a sudden with the emergence of Star Wars, it went from cult status to pop culture status.
Yeah, I think that, you and I before the break were talking a little bit about wit and humor, and I think a lot of it has to do with that. I think a lot of it has to do with whether or not it was relatable on a human level. And I think that Star Wars just, got you invested in those people immediately. You know, the thing is, when you listen to interviews with people like J.J. Abrams, they're saying the same things my mom and I are saying,
mm-hmm.
Because they're fans too. And I think that it did connect in that way. But it allowed these other things that also had a great deal of humanity and wit in them to sort of be elevated, I think.
Now, you're a young guy, and yet in the book you write about Barbarella. How did that happen?
Well, I'm 34. I don't know.
But Barbarella came way before you.
Sure. Well, that was something that my dad sort of, surprised me with when I was a little bit too young to see it. And so I think that it had this great impact on me to make me kind of think about who your main characters could be in like a sci-fi adventure a little differently than I had before.
I remember seeing Barbarella in a drive-in with my family when I was probably 5 or 6, and even though I loved the movie, I'll tell you what I love the most about Barbarella. In the theme song for Barbarella at the beginning, there's a lyric that I'll never forget because I think it's the stupidest yet funniest lyric of any song ever. It's Barbarella Psychedella wrapped up in a taco shell of love. Isn't that a beautiful lyric?
It's fantastic. Yeah, I watched it the other day by myself, just to kind of make sure that I still liked it.
Yeah.
Because I was like, God, I wrote this essay about it because it was this big deal in my childhood and then kind of informed some of my teenage years a little bit. And I was like, do I still like this movie? And I was just...
Did it hold up for you? Was it okay?
It did, and I think that people have this sort of, they kind of like shrug their shoulders or arch their eyebrows funny at the word kitsch.
Yes.
And they're always like, oh, it's so kitsch. This is kitsch and that's kitsch. I was like, I don't know. Jane Fonda's actually just straight up funny.
She is.
She was kind of like the Kristen Wiig of her day. You think of like Barefoot in the Park.
Yeah.
How funny she is in that. And so I was thinking like, for the first time I saw Jane Fonda at the actor, in this film. And I was like, oh, she's funny here.
Yeah.
That's why this works. She does this deadpan, that only a humorous actor like her can do and knows how to do. And I don't know how it's done. I just recognize it when I see it.
The band Duran Duran got their name from a character in that movie in Barbarella.
Yeah, Duran Duran with a D at the end. They dropped the D's.
Yeah.
That was definitely confusing for me because I was familiar with, the band mostly just because of the James Bond song.
Yep.
Yep.
A View to a Kill.
You know.
Yeah.
So I just kind of, I think that it's one of those things where you just think that those words have somehow always existed. but yeah, they, and then of course there's Electric Barbarella.
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
You say in the book, again, the book Luke Skywalker Can't Read and Other Geeky Truths, you maintain that Dracula and Sherlock Holmes are really, at their core, they are hipsters, aren't they?
Yeah, well, I meant that kind of in a positive way. You know, if we think of a hipster as someone who's sort of searching for authenticity by being a contrarian, maybe, you know, I think that then you've got, you know, I mean, Dracula is extremely well-dressed in the Bela Lugosi film, which is the one that I sort of focus on, because that's kind of Dracula for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, he kind of is this wonderfully suave, you know, villain that you want to root for. Holmes is, you know, has this bohemian, brainy, you know, kind of soul. And, you know, there's always these legends that, you know, that Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who created Sherlock Holmes and, of course, wrote all those stories and novels, had met Oscar Wilde and was inspired to put, like, a bohemian sort of vibe into Sherlock Holmes because of Oscar Wilde. It doesn't get more hipster than Oscar Wilde.
No, extremely.
You know, in my book, you know.
Yep, yep. You know what always bothered me, and I've talked about this on the air, and no one's ever fully explained it to me, and this is about Dracula. You explained his mode of dress and how suave he looks and stuff like that, but it always struck me funny is if you look at him, he's got a bunch of medals. He has medals on him, and I always wonder, what did he win medals for? What was Dracula? Was he a swim champion before he was a vampire? What did he do?
He picked those up at a vintage, you know, store, you know, because he's trying to be hip.
Is that what it was?
You know, he picked up one of these, you know, vintage places that you guys have probably got them. We got them here in
Brooklyn.
Sure,
they're everywhere.
You know, people wearing medals they didn't earn, or, you know, swim tinkers from 1979. I think it's totally, it's an affect.
I'll tell you what, it ruins it for all the other vampires who legitimately earn their medals, in my opinion. It's very upsetting. The book is great, Ryan. You should be very proud of this. It's Luke Skywalker Can't Read and Other Geeky Truths. It's available wherever better books are sold. You say this kind of thing this time of year, it makes a really good Christmas present for people who like pop culture. What are you working on now? What do you have coming up next?
Well, I'm kind of doing a little book tour in January, and I'm working on a bunch of, you know, writing about Star Wars is going to be a little bit of my job right now. You know, so I've got some essays coming out with BuzzFeed and, you know, the Daily Beast about Star Wars. I just finished kind of writing a bunch of stuff about the end of the new Doctor Who season. But yeah, I'm hoping that in February I'll be sending something to my agent for either a novel or another essay collection like this, perhaps.
Well, good. Keep in touch with us. We'd love to have you on anytime you're ready.
Thank you so much. It's really, really been fantastic.
Thanks, Ryan. Have a great holiday. That's Ryan Britt, everybody. Luke Skywalker Can't Read and Other Geeky Truths. Pick it up. It's a really great book. A quick break and then some news. It's Bill Leff with you on WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder has the day off. She's expected to return tomorrow. Steve, you're the only person I know who does not have a scheduled press conference for today.
I don't. I'm thinking I have to fire my publicist, obviously.
Obviously.
I've been calling out for a news conference for weeks now. And
right. Well, they're not doing their job.
No one would show up.
Oh, you don't know that to be true. Mm. Somebody would show up. The Anita Alvarez press conference is scheduled sometime within this half hour, and we will make a decision at some point whether or not we're going to carry that, huh?
Well, we'll listen to it, yeah, and let you know. This is it's a case that's very similar to the Laquan McDonald case in that it involves a police shooting and a dash cam. But I'm not sure that the situation that led to the shooting is exactly the same, and that's
right.
What the state's attorney's been looking into. So she's going to announce her decision, it looks like, on charges coming up within about 10 minutes or so.
There's also a press conference scheduled today to announce that the Chicago police are being investigated on a more federal level, correct?
That came earlier this morning.
That happened already?
Yeah. Loretta Lynch, the U.S. the attorney general, I should say, announced that at 9 o'clock. Now we've got Alvarez, then we've got the family of Mr. Johnson, the case involving this latest Alvarez dash cam. They will be talking later this afternoon, and then around 3 o'clock this afternoon, Mayor Emanuel will have a news conference addressing all of the gun issues in Chicago.
All right. So a day filled with press conferences. It's also Pearl Harbor Day. We don't want to forget about that. Now, when we were kids, and I don't know that this is the case anymore, they would always set aside a little bit of time in school
I remember in grade school, this was like an annual event on a day like today, like Pearl Harbor Day. And we would kind of go over the events of the day that happened so many years ago. But I don't think that's a factor much anymore, and that's kind of sad.
Well, it's time has passed. You know, when you were in grade school, it was only 20 years before, 25 years before. So that would be like 1990 in our time right now.
It's really
weird.
Think
of that.
You're right. No, you're absolutely right. And I do remember there were a couple of kids, a handful of kids, who somehow had a family involvement, just one or two kids who had, you know, a great uncle or something who had served time there in Hawaii. And I'm embarrassed to admit this. I've been to Hawaii a handful of times. I've been there three times. I have still not visited.
No?
No, and I should, because everybody I know who's ever been there says great things about it.
Yeah, I've not been to Hawaii, so I don't know. But when I was an intern for this radio station, I stayed with the Wallace family. Jim Wallace was a Chicago public school teacher and was in the military and at Pearl Harbor on the day of
the
attack.
Was he there for the day? What did he remember?
No longer with us now. Oh. But he was working for the base newspaper.
Now, does he tell the story? Because I've heard several people who were there tell the same story, that at some point we believed as a nation that we weren't going to get attacked, that just didn't happen here in America, and then all of a sudden we did, and it was such an... It would be, I guess, equivalent to anybody who was around during September 11th and thought, well, this is America. They don't do stuff to us. We go over the problem's always over there. It's not over here.
Right. I think that's probably true. I mean, the difference in, you know, September 11th to Pearl Harbor was, even though Pearl Harbor was us, it still, there was a sense of it being there. You know, they attacked the U.S.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like the homeland, if you will.
Right.
But yeah, it was the same sort of thing. You know, they're fighting in Europe. They've been fighting in Europe. They'll do it again.
Sure.
But we're sort of inoculated from that.
Felt.
Fighting in Asia. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, of course, to anyone who had any involvement in that day in Pearl Harbor, we're thinking about you today, certainly. This is a segment I want to call Mistakes in the Media. There have been a couple of big mistakes in the media. Hard to believe. But we wanted to point a couple of them out. They're not pleasant. Here's one. I don't know if you saw this ad, Steve. This has been playing on the computer online almost all the whole week. Coca-Cola is apologizing for an ad that they put out. Now, I don't think you could see this ad here in the United States. I think this ad was being shown in Spanish-speaking nations, although now if you go online, you can find it pretty easily. Did you see the ad with the people of Mexico and the people of America coming to them? Have you seen this ad?
No, I have not seen it.
Here's what I'll read you the story, but I'll tell you, because I've seen the ad twice now, I'll tell you what you get to see when you watch the ad. And it's readily available. I guess, Kevin, we can throw this on our Facebook page, can't we? There's no reason we can't do that. Coca-Cola is crazy delicious. If you enjoy Coke, why wouldn't you watch the ad? Here's what you get to see. You see people in Mexico doing, I guess you'd say, menial labor. They're just doing jobs that are kind of undesirable, and they don't seem to be happy doing them. They're gritty people doing important work, but they just don't seem to be very happy doing them. Then what you get is a bunch of really clean, scrubby, all-white American people who come to their villages and bring them Coca-Cola, and then all of a sudden these people who are kind of downtrodden and not very happy with their existence, because the Americans, the clean-looking Americans, have come to their aid and have brought them Coca-Cola, well, their life just turns around magically.
So we rescued them.
We saved them from a life of...
With a Coke. We gave them a Coke and a smile.
We gave them a Coke and a smile, and then at the very end, you see that all the people who had been working have put together a tree. They've built a giant red Christmas tree that looks like the Coca-Cola label, and it lights up, and all of a sudden, everybody's happy. The Mexicans are happy, and the Americans are happy. Well, guess what? A lot of people didn't take too kindly to that commercial. They thought it was unrealistic that a bunch of clean-looking American kids can't just come to their country and give them a bottle of Coke and make everything good again. It says here, Coca-Cola has apologized for an ad in Mexico that features white urban youths visiting the nation's indigenous people and bringing them soda. The video shows, this is essentially what I just told you, the video shows sad faces of indigenous people, and they do. There's one... To be honest with you, there's one person who almost cracks a smile. There's one guy who, for some reason, I think somebody, as they were putting this together, goes, we have to have somebody in there that doesn't look destitute. But just have one guy right. Almost smiling, not fully smiling, but almost smiling.
Would that be the foreman?
Yes. Yes, because he's making the most money on the job. He's making 11 cents an hour. The rest of them are making 4 cents an hour. Go on.
I was just going to say, Anita Alvarez is about to start speaking here. If we can just drop in and hear what she has to say about this case.
Review of the 2014 shooting of Ronald Johnson by an on-duty Chicago police officer. Mr. Johnson was shot and killed in the early morning hours of October 12th of 2014 by Chicago police officer George Hernandez. Officer Hernandez was one of multiple officers who were responding to emergency 911 calls of gunshots being fired near the area of 53rd Street and King Drive on the city's south side. Earlier that evening, Mr. Johnson and three acquaintances attended a party in an apartment building at this location. After leaving the party, the four men got into a vehicle and drove away from the scene, and Mr. Johnson being seated behind the driver of the car in the rear passenger seat of that automobile. So he was in the rear he was behind the driver in the rear passenger seat. In the rear seat of the car. As they drove away, an unknown offender or offenders shot multiple times at the car occupied by the four men, shattering the rear window of the vehicle and causing other damage to the car. None of the occupants of the car were struck by the bullets that damaged this vehicle. Without calling 911 themselves to report what had occurred or driving to the nearest police station, the four men drove a short distance away and then returned to the scene where they had just been shot at. They then parked the car and exited that vehicle on foot. By this time, Chicago police officers were en route to the scene in response to the multiple emergency 911 calls from citizens reporting that shots had been fired in that area. The first two officers that arrived on the scene encountered one of the men who had returned to the scene with Mr. Johnson and the others. Those officers were in the process of speaking to the driver of the car to investigate the shooting. At the same time, other responding officers observed Ronald Johnson near that very same location. Those officers saw that Mr. Johnson was carrying a gun and ordered him to stop and drop the weapon. Mr. Johnson did not comply with the officer's orders and instead ran from the officers while holding the gun. He initially ran from 53rd Street, turning south onto King Drive, where he encountered the original two officers who were on the scene and speaking with the other occupant of the vehicle. These two officers were observed Mr. Johnson with a gun, and they drew their weapons and ordered Johnson to stop and drop the weapon. Mr. Johnson slowed down and indicated that he would comply with the officer's orders. One of the officers reholstered his weapon to free up his hands to place Johnson under arrest, but Johnson was able to break free of this officer's grasp, and the officer fell to the ground. Another occupant from the vehicle confirms that he had heard police yell out that Johnson had a gun. At that point, Mr. Johnson turned away from those two officers and began to flee in a diagonal direction, crossing King Drive while still holding on to this weapon. Officer Hernandez was one of three officers who had responded to the scene in an unmarked police cruiser, and the three officers were exiting their vehicle when Johnson ran behind their car and toward the nearby Washington Park towards another police unit. At that time, Officer Hernandez began pursuit of Mr. Johnson and then fired five shots. Two of those shots struck Mr. Johnson, one in the back of his right knee. The second shot entered just below Mr. Johnson's right armpit and exited the body near the left eye socket. Mr. Johnson was pronounced dead soon after being transported to the hospital from the scene. My office has prepared a detailed written analysis of this case, which we will provide to all of you here today, as well as to the public. This analysis provides us specific facts and details of this investigation, as well as the legal analysis that goes into a charging decision in a case of this nature. We have also compiled a video presentation that includes 911 calls, Chicago police radio traffic exchanges, and the dash cam video footage that captures relevant relevant events as they unfolded very quickly that night. Before we give you that video presentation, there are a couple of points that I need to make. First of all, the investigation into this shooting was conducted by Chicago's Independent Police Review Authority. IPRA investigates these police shootings. We are then asked to review cases. IPRA is the investigative partner or investigative agency on this case. To be clear, IPRA is an independent entity, and I have no authority over their process or their pace of their investigations. The dash cam video we will show you shortly was initially presented by IPRA to my office on October 31st, 2014, along with some initial reports and documents relating to this investigation. IPRA ultimately provided all CPD in-car camera videos, as well as video from a nearby senior citizen center and copies of depositions of officers and citizens that have been taken in a corresponding civil case involving this shooting. It is also important for you to know that my office shared this video with the FBI in November of 2014 after having received it. After reviewing the video in the Ronald Johnson case, the FBI informed us that they would not participate in the investigation moving forward. At that point, IPRA remained the designated investigative agency that would handle this case, and that is standard procedure. IPRA investigates police shootings. From a legal perspective, in reviewing this matter for potential criminal charges, the legal question in this case is not whether Officer Hernandez shot Mr. Johnson and killed him. Those facts are not in dispute. The legal questions are, number one, is there sufficient evidence that exists to meet the legal burden of proof required to bring charges in this case? And number two, in using deadly force, did Officer Hernandez act reasonably under the law? Before we go further, I want to introduce Assistant State's Attorney Lynn McCarthy. She is the head of my professional standards unit that handles cases of police misconduct and police shootings. We have prepared a detailed description of the facts and circumstances that we uncovered during the investigation, along with the dash cam video that Assistant State's Attorney McCarthy will now present for all of you. Lynn?
So, Bill, there you have the news conference as it continues to go, and Anita Alvarez and her assistants then will show this video. But we'll continue to monitor it and let you know as soon as we get the resolution to it. But I think, you know, there are indications here, as I said before, that this was a very different case from the Laquan McDonald case.
Steve, this is the first time that the video is being seen publicly. Is that correct?
That's correct. This is one that the incident happened not long after or within a week of the Laquan McDonald case.
Right.
And it was one that the attorneys, you know, had been calling for, especially in light of the Laquan McDonald case. So, yes, this is the first time it's being released.
Are they, like the McDonald video of a short time ago, are they anticipating more demonstrations, more rallies, more
Well,
marches?
I don't know. You know, it's this is a I don't know, Bill. Right now the prosecutors aren't even getting to the dash cam video.
They're
going over like a PowerPoint presentation.
Right.
I think that you know, it's a different story. If it says clearly that this man had a gun,
right,
and had broken away from police, I think that's a different situation than was the McDonald one.
Right. All right. So we will continue to follow this story very closely. Steve and everybody in the newsroom is working on that. We're going to take a quick break and then come back. It's Bill Left. Wendy Snyder has the day off. Stick around. Oh, if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, we'll get that done. This is WGN. Tim, thanks so much. It's Bill Left, not by myself anymore. Wendy
hey, Bill,
Snyder
just
has,
to let yeah, you know, sure. We are still monitoring this Alvarez announcement. They are still going they're still going over all of the findings, but when we have something definitive and whether they're going to charge the police officer in the case, we'll let you know. But right now, they're still playing 911 tapes, going over maps. They're being very detailed about exactly what happened, so this could take a little bit.
Eric, thank you, Kim. Eric Zorn is in studio with me, not just regular Eric Zorn, the irreplaceable Eric Zorn. And he just said to me, Kim, I know that we should be monitoring this, so keep your ear on it and let us know whenever anything big happens and we can go to a live feed. Correct?
We sure will.
Can you just quickly, I know you want to monitor it, but there have been no major surprises just yet, have there been?
No, not at this point. It's very detailed, very differently laid out to me than with the whole Laquan McDonald case. They are really covering every base. They are being very factual. They are detailing this up to the very, very, you know, nth degree. And they're not leaving any stone unturned. Whereas there are a lot of questions in the Laquan McDonald case, it appears to me with this case and the release of all the information, they are not leaving any stone unturned and are giving all the information out to the public.
All right, Kim, just let us know.
Does Eric? It sound so far as if she's going to press charges? Or
so far, no.
Wrong here?
I mean, so far, no, but, you know, you just never know.
It could change.
But it could change.
Because the attorneys for Ronald Johnson's family have said that this is every bit as bad as the Laquan McDonald
right.
shooting, and they haven't shown the video yet. That's correct, right?
Right. Right now, they released the 911 calls. Right now, they're showing a looks like a graphic, a map of exactly where the cars came together, and you know they're going over exactly where the different cars were located. But so far, have not seen the video.
All right, Kim, keep monitoring it and let us know. And if we need to break into the press conference once again, we will definitely do it. We appreciate it. First of all, hi. How are you? Everything good?
Well, we're right in the middle of the gears here in terms of the news. We were going to talk a little bit about what's going on and whether this video is as bad as has been previewed by the attorneys for, again, the young man who died. I mean, that's going to be
Johnson.
Huge. Yeah, Ronald Johnson III. The question is, if this video does show what the attorneys have said it's going to show, then you know this city's already kind of on the edge
yeah.
about police violence. If we find another incident that happened again about 13, 14 months ago, you know this is bad.
It's two of these in such a short. And I know that the details are different, possibly dramatically different. We're finding that out right now. But just to have two instances like this in such a short span of time really is almost indefensible.
Well, and it's also in the context of some of these other shootings, you know, the Tamir Rice shooting in Cleveland
yeah.
and the shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson and
yeah.
then the death in Baltimore. I mean, this was all in the context of this broader concern about police violence. So yeah, this is bad. And people are saying that, you know, Anita Alvarez's career is certainly in jeopardy. She's facing a primary challenge in March. And there's repeated calls for Mayor Emanuel to resign. That's
right.
not going to happen, but there are repeated calls for it. So,
I don't think it's going to happen. Originally, with the first video a couple of weeks ago with Laquan McDonald, that was the first thing out, is that somebody big, either the mayor or McCarthy or Alvarez, will no longer be working in a couple of weeks. It seemed to be a throwing under the bus of Gary McCarthy a little bit, didn't it?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, he...
Nothing's yeah. better because Gary McCarthy isn't the superintendent of police anymore. It's just one of those things you have to make some sort of a move to say, look, we're doing stuff.
There was a story in the news today that I thought was very interesting, and it was Escalante, who's the superintendent. What's the term? Interim acting superintendent.
Yeah.
And he's also, I believe, a candidate for the permanent job. But he said he's putting out a directive that – you know, one of the problems with the videos in the Laquan McDonald case is that there's no audio.
Right.
And so evidently either the officers put the batteries in their microphones wrong or the systems weren't working or whatever. And so Escalante, the interim superintendent, put out a directive to make sure when you get into your car that the audio and video are working. Otherwise, it's a disciplinary offense.
Yeah.
And my thought to that was, well, okay, fine, but why didn't Superintendent McCarthy say this a year ago?
Right.
Because
right.
they knew. They had those videos. They had this video without any audio in it a year ago.
Right.
What was McCarthy doing? Where was the concern about that then? And, you know, that's among the things that makes you think, well, maybe things are better that he's gone. Maybe this is the beginning of a turning of a page of some sort that they really have to get their hands around this problem. So
the more disturbing video element is the Burger King video, which really seems to have been doctored in some way, doesn't it? It's just impossible that somehow there's that much missing time on a surveillance video.
There is, what is it, 86 minutes is missing from, and it starts, you know, about half an hour before the event.
It's at a very convenient time.
It's at a very convenient time. And of course, the explanation that we're getting from defenders of the police is that, well, this system was not working very well in general. And, you know, I don't think that adds up.
Mm-hmm.
If you run one of these franchise restaurants, especially mm-hmm. in an area where that's high crime, and you've got a video system, a security video system there that's not working very well.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge problem. It's a huge problem for the chain, and it's a huge problem for the individual store. If one of your employees is killed in a holdup or beaten up in a holdup, and you go, well, we have a video system, but it wasn't working, you are not only morally culpable
right.
for that, but there's a huge financial penalty that would incur. I want to see the evidence that there are like all these gaps going back
right.
before and after the system just didn't work that well. It just happened not to work at this one
There's
time.
A manager at that Burger King who has said, oh, no, believe me when I tell you, that system works like a charm.
Well,
it's just this one particular time.
I haven't seen him interviewed, so I'm not sure about that. But I do know that just as a matter of common practice, these stores don't just go, oh, our video system, it works sometimes, it doesn't
right.
work. They're there for a reason, so it doesn't really pass the smell test, and the fact that it's the gap is right there. Now the question would be, what does that video show? Because it's not the cameras weren't pointed at the actual shooting of Laquan McDonald.
Right.
They happened a blocker and block and a half away from there.
Right.
So the question is, what would that show? What would they want to get rid of? And the only thing that I can think of would be the supplementary allegation here that the police on the scene were shooing away witnesses. They weren't taking witness statements.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't getting names, addresses, phone numbers of witnesses to this incident.
Mm-hmm.
They were telling them to go move along. There's nothing to see here.
Mm-hmm.
And there may have been some element of that. People going into the Burger King, officers going in there and shooing people away. That could be part of what's going on here. Other than that, it's hard to figure what would be on that video that would be worth erasing. So,
if you were a police officer, and we can take either of these two cases, the Ronald Johnson case, the Laquan McDonald case, if you're a police officer and your partner does something like the shootings, do you testify against them? I know that there's a brotherhood of police, and again, I know that this is one of the toughest, most stressful jobs that there is, but do you put somebody, do you take a friendship and just cast it aside, a partnership and cast it aside, and tell the truth if you're called to testify or not?
Well, I like to think that I do. Always people are saying, well, most police officers, 90% of police officers are honest.
I bet a lot higher than that.
But look at the random sample we had at this scene here.
Right.
And one of the things is, it's very troubling, not surprising, but very troubling. If you look at the police reports and what happened on Friday night after you'd gone home and I'd gone home, some of my friends said they were working here until 12:30 at night. They did a document dump on us. They took all the police reports and gave them to the media at, I think it was like 6 o'clock or something like that. It was very late. And essentially it showed that all the officers on the scene who wrote up their reports somehow came up with the same story that Officer Van Dyke told, which is that Laquan McDonald was threatening him and lunging at him and gesturing at him, things that are completely proven false by this video. I mean,
right.
It's not, there is no nuance in that video. We've all seen it a whole bunch of times. McDonald has a gun, has a short knife in his right hand.
Yeah.
And that's not insignificant, but he's moving away from the police officer. He's moving at an angle away from the police officers who opened fire on him. The police officer's report says just the opposite, that the officer says he's backpedaling and McDonald is advancing on him. It's a complete lie.
Right.
I mean, this is not a matter of interpretation. The video is there. And yet all the other officers on the scene, when they're writing up their reports, those who claim to have seen the incident, are saying things like, well, he was getting, it looked like he might be getting up to attack again, and that's why he had to keep shooting. I mean, how does that happen?
Right.
How does that, I have not heard yet from any defenders of police officers, how does an entire group of them all come up with the same story? And why do they do that? Why don't they just say, look, this is what I saw, and write it down what you saw, and then let the chips fall where they may? It's
frustrating.
It's very frustrating, and you say, and it does make you question this assertion. Like, well, most police officers are honest,
right?
Most of them are honest. Well, you have this random sample again of police officers who showed up on this scene, and they all lied. So, what does that tell you?
Yeah,
it's very disturbing.
Because, I'm not the first person to bring this up. If there was some sort of imminent threat from McDonald, it would have been a lot more than Van Dyke that drew their weapons, correct?
Yeah, it's an interesting situation. I mean, if that had been a gun in McDonald's hands, we would be having a totally different conversation. Because when you have a weapon like that, and if you're threatening people, you've been acting erratically, and you're moving off toward other people, and
right.
you've got a gun,
right?
They have a duty to control that person, and if they take measures to try to do it and they can't. This is a little off topic, but did you happen to see the video on the news last night of the knife-wielding terrorist in the London Underground?
I did.
You watch that, and the guy is like slashing at people.
I did.
And the cops come on the scene, and they don't open fire on him. Maybe
right.
The Bobbies carry guns yet?
They bring him to the ground. They kick the weapon away from him.
They had a taser.
Well, yeah, they tased him first, but then once he was on the ground and his weapon was loose, the
yeah.
knife was loose, one of the officers came by and kicked it away very quickly. It seemed to be by the book
yeah,
from everything
way,
we saw.
That's the way you handle it. So in any case, it's there's also something called the 21-foot rule, which is not actually a rule, but it's kind of a guideline that police officers have. It's based on some research that's done that shows that if you are within 21 feet of someone who has a knife
mm-hmm.
and your gun is in your holster,
mm-hmm.
that is the perimeter. The 21 feet is about the distance where you can safely defend yourself if that person makes a charge at you, that you should be able to get your gun out and shoot them. If they're inside 21 feet and they're menacing you, you have every right, every duty almost to use deadly force against them. Now, McDonald was probably about 15 to 20 feet away, but he was not menacing the officer. He was going the other direction, and the officer had his gun out, which shortens that 21-foot perimeter. So this is what the trial is going to look like. We can already tell what the trial is going to be, which is that Officer Van Dyke's defenders or his defense team is going to say that he was not necessarily in fear of his life at that time, but he was in fear of the lives of innocent bystanders
right.
who aren't in the video screen, but who might have been victimized by this guy who was out of control and had a knife. That's going to be his defense.
Mm-hmm. Eric Zorn is here, the irreplaceable Eric Zorn. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, you can call in or text in. Back with more in just a little bit. It's Bill Leff on WGN. It's Bill Leff with you. Wendy Snyder has the day off. Eric Zorn is in studio with me from the Chicago Tribune. Eric, before you and I talk, though, I want to throw it back to Kim Gordon in the newsroom for just a second or two. Kim, you've been monitoring the Anita Alvarez press conference. They have showed the video so far, correct?
They have just finished showing the video. Actually, CLTV decided not to show the video on TV because they hadn't seen it first, but they have shown the video. There was no audio again on that videotape, but they put police calls over the videos to kind of coincide with what was happening at the time with the police call. But now they're going over the weapon and they're giving details about the weapon. So we still don't know yet at this point, Bill, whether the officer will be charged or not.
All right. Keep your ear to it. Eric, I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
Is there a sense, Kim, that they think something wrong happened here? Does it seem to be defending the officers? We're watching the video.
No, it doesn't appear that they're defending him. It just appears that they are being so detailed that they're just not leaving any stone unturned and want to give every single possible detail there is to let the public know exactly how this all happened and what transpired.
I'm just looking at my Twitter feed. Marianne Ahern is reporting that the chief of detectives in Chicago...
Actually, she just said there will be no criminal charges.
She did.
She did. She just said it. Just this very second.
Okay.
All right. Very interesting.
I'm just saying that NBC5 is reporting that the Chicago Police Department's chief of detectives resigned from his post Monday. So this just happened. Constantine Dean Andrews. Story is like developing as we're sitting here
right,
talking.
Right, right.
So no charges are going to be filed. Anita Alvarez is
no charges. And they say they just could not determine beyond a reasonable doubt that, basically there was any findings that would charge the there would for a need to charge
well,
the officer.
You know, we haven't seen. I mean, we've only seen here that and just in the background. We've been watching the monitors a little bit, and we didn't see they're picking a part of the video. I'm just wondering how this is going to play in the public, whether this looks like a justified shooting to the layperson, or whether this is going to be cause for more dismay.
Right? Is it adding more fuel to the fire? That's the only thing. The timing of it is just.
It's really
it's
bad.
Hard. It's tough.
It's bad for everybody.
It is.
It's bad for the police. It's bad for the citizens. It's certainly bad for Anita Alvarez. So.
Well, Kim, thanks again. Keep an ear to it, and if something does happen, just break in. It's so hard. This is the second video that we've now watched in 2 or 3 weeks with a guy getting killed, and it's so hard to watch a human being get gunned down, isn't it? I mean, you can see it in movies and television shows, and in your head you say to yourself, well, it's an actor pretending to be shot. When it's real, it's a whole different story.
Yeah, it's very powerful, very moving. And, you know, you wonder, this case, I mean, like I said, you and I have seen this just a couple of times here on these little tiny TV screens in the background of the studio. So I'm not prepared to make any judgments about it at all. But obviously everyone's going to be studying this video in the next couple of days, and you're going to hear from a lot of the people on all sides of this about whether this was justified and what it all means. So this is going to be the story. It's been the story of the last 2 weeks. It's going to be the story of the week this week too. So it's really something else.
So true. Eric, there was so much that we wanted to get to today, but because of the breaking news, we kind of sidetracked. We'll talk to you in the next couple of weeks, certainly.
Absolutely. Talk to you soon. Bye.
It's Eric Zorn, the irreplaceable Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. Read him whenever you get a chance. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll find out what Steve Bertrand has planned for you on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill Leff on WGN. Tim, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder has the day off. She is on schedule to return tomorrow. She has a football-related injury. She hurt her back playing football years ago in college, and every once in a while, especially when the weather turns, that injury acts up on her. Steve Dale, noted pet expert Steve Dale, will join us at 2:05. And Kevin, is he bringing a llama? I keep hearing he's going to bring a llama.
Yeah, a few llamas.
That'll be fun. Steve Dale and some llamas at 2:05. Last night, and I bring this up because we had a couple of texts in the first half of the show earlier, but we didn't have a chance to talk about it. Last night, they did a special on TV. I don't know if anybody else saw this. Frank Sinatra, as it turns out, the great Frank Sinatra, the chairman of the board, old Blue Eyes, would be, had he still been around, 100 years old. It's hard to believe that Frank Sinatra would be 100 years old, but they did a two-hour special devoted to Frank Sinatra last night that I watched and my wife watched.
I thought it was fantastic.
Wasn't
I saw the
it
end
good?
Of it, but I wish I'd seen the whole thing
now. Kim, it was so good. We tried to get Kylie's home. You know, she's on her gap year, so she's home from school. And she lasted about 15 or 16 seconds. Not as big of a fan as Frank Sinatra as I am. But, boy, you got to find it. I know it'll be on demand. Really worth seeing.
Oh, I thought it was really great.
Now, when you saw the last 15 minutes.
Yeah,
so
I think I came in, let's see. Well, I saw the Lady Gaga thing at the end, which was great. And then oh my gosh, I'm blanking on. Trisha Yearwood. She was fantastic. And, you know, it came in right around that, but it was really great.
I'll tell you who knocked it out of the park, in my opinion. Alicia Keys. For people who don't know,
did you see
Alicia Keys?
Oh,
so good. It was a combination of kind of his life in retrospect. They told not a very complete story, the Frank Sinatra story. They kind of jumped all around. And when you see early footage of Frank Sinatra, it's shocking how thin he was. I mean, I've seen him in movies, but in the early days, like before Frank Sinatra was a national name, he was just an absolute rail. He was as thin could be. Hard to picture the same bulkier, beefier Sinatra of later years being that thin kid, but he was, but so talented early on. So you had his storyline being told throughout the 2 hours, and then you also had stars of today, and I include Tony Bennett in that, but guys like Adam Levine and, you know, people who are popular now belting out Frank Sinatra songs. So Alicia Keys, as you said, was magnificent. Harry Connick Jr., who I think is probably the closest we've had style-wise.
He is, crooner type.
Don't you think?
I think so.
Yeah. He
Maybe
was
Michael
good.
Bublé a little bit?
Yeah, I could see Michael Bublé. He was not on the special, but he's got that same kind of smooth style, I think. You know who else was really good? And this was, I don't know why I was so surprised by this, because I've heard him sing before, but Seth MacFarlane was the MC.
He was great. He
why
sang
was
at
he
the
good?
End. I thought he was great.
He
My
was
husband
so
was
good.
Like, he can sing. He had no idea. He's so multi-talented.
Really good. Really good. So everybody who was on the special did a good job. And there were a couple people that I wasn't familiar with. There were one or two guys. Like, there was a guy who looked like Abe Lincoln. He had an Abe Lincoln beard and a very big hat. And I'm not sure who that guy was, but he was out a couple of times. People liked him, but I'm not sure who he was. Anyway, everybody came out and paid nice tributes to Frank Sinatra. We're getting some calls. 312-981-7200. Let me get a couple of these calls in. Marge, hello?
Hello?
Hi. We were talking about the Frank Sinatra special from last night. You saw this?
It was fabulous.
Wasn't it?
It was. And I never knew he had that many hits.
Oh, yeah. They just kept coming.
Exactly. I thought, wow, that was... They ought to do that more often. Makes you feel good.
Well, you know, the thing is, and they made a point of this early on in the special, Marge, is he started having hits in the 1940s and then was singing all the way through into the 80s.
I know, and isn't that something? It's just because, what is it, maybe in the late 70s or 80s, or everybody was calling him a has-been.
Yeah.
And he really came back. Boy, it was. I loved it.
He took a little time off, decided he didn't want to be in show business anymore, and then his kids talked him into coming back, and he came back strong. But, that was fun. Fun
that
to watch.
Was really good.
Thank you, Marge. I appreciate
it. I love
you guys. Oh, you're the best. Thanks.
Good work.
Thanks so much. Now, I want to play for you, for people who did not get a chance to see the Frank Sinatra special last night. They went out of their way, and this to me, because I know some things about Frank Sinatra. I've been a fan for a long, long time, but I had never heard this story before. They did a taped piece with Bono and The Edge from U2, and Bono told the story about how at some point early in their career, you know, U2 came up on MTV, and they were one of the hip bands at the time, so somehow they finagled an interview. They were able to sit down and have lunch with Frank Sinatra, and what they did was Bono and The Edge... They met Frank Sinatra for lunch, and they told him that they had written a song for him that they wanted him to perform. And he was very cordial to them and nodded a lot and listened to the song. And then Bono pointed out that that was the last they ever heard of Frank Sinatra. He had no interest at all in recording his song that they had written. But the song is actually, I thought, pretty good. Kevin, we have a little bit of it, right? I want to say the title of it is One Shot Happy, Two Shots of Sad. Is that what it's called?
I think it's Two Shots Happy, One Shot of Sad.
All right. You please use that measurement when making this recipe at home. Use Kevin's measurement. It's the correct one. You got to have the right amounts of happy and sad when creating this. So here's Bono and The Edge, the guys from U2, performing the song that they had written for Frank Sinatra, but that he did not deem of his style. Listen to a little bit of this.
Two shots of happy, one shot of sad. Think I'm no good? Well, I know I've been bad. Took you to a place, now you can't get back. Two shots of happy, one shot of sad.
Kevin, I know that you're not a fan of U2. And something's wrong with you for that. I don't know what, but something's wrong with you. That song, what do you think of that song?
My favorite U2 song.
That's something good. That's got a nice sound to it.
Yeah.
It's got a very smoky, dreamy feel to it.
I it doesn't sound too Sinatra-y to me, though.
I think because you're hearing it out of Bono's voice, because as I heard the whole song, I was picturing Frank Sinatra doing that song, and I thought to myself, that would work for him.
I don't know. It seems a little mysterious and dark to me.
But I'm telling you, if you listen to some of his stuff, and he has different styles, there's different Sinatra styles, but one of them is that very introspective, you know, what went wrong? Let's sing about what went wrong. He has that kind of, and that song, although it also has, to me anyway, there's a James Bond tinge to it, too.
Yeah, I can definitely see
yeah.
that.
So, unfortunately, as I mentioned, Mr. Sinatra said, I'll give you a call, and he never did. So they felt a little dejected. They do the song now every once in a while. So if you didn't see the special last night, the Frank Sinatra 100 Years, find it somewhere. If you're a fan of his, I think you'll be really happy with what you saw. It was a pretty good night of entertainment. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We have a whole bunch coming up on the show. Noted pet expert Steve Dale will be by later on, and a lot more. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder taking the day off on WGN.
We were mixing the bitter with the sweet. Don't try to figure out.
This is Bono and The Edge from U2 performing a song that they had written for Frank Sinatra, but he decided he wasn't comfortable performing it. Kevin, again, give the exact breakdown on how many shots of happy and how many shots of sad are in that title.
Well, you take two shots of happy and one shot of sad. That's
and then a little bit of cream on top. Just a little bit. You don't want to overdo it. We're getting some calls. We're at 312-981-7200. Joe, let's start out with you. How are you?
Hello.
Hi, Joe. What did you think? Did you enjoy the song or the special?
I enjoyed the special. I taped it, and I'm so glad I did because I really, really like that song. And I'm going to go watch it again today.
You'll be pleased. You really will. They did a nice job.
Yeah, and I thought, I mean, to me, it's in the vein of, it's one for my baby and one
yes.
for the road.
Yes.
You know, that type of thing. And I just, hard to understand why Frank didn't want to do it, but I thought it was a great song.
It's very haunting, and I wonder if, at that point, it was the beginning of U2, which means it was probably toward the very end of Frank's performing career. Maybe at that time, he wasn't really taking on any new material.
Well, that makes sense, too.
That could be it.
But even the way they presented it last night, I mean, with, the strings and the...
Beautiful.
It was just a beautiful song. I really enjoyed it.
Yep, so I agree.
I'm glad you brought this up.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it. Have a great holiday.
You too.
Take care. Bye. We're getting a lot of people commenting on last night's special. This was the Frank Sinatra 100-year birthday special. 331 says, Garth Brooks was the worst performer. He could have stayed home. I'm not sure how they made the decisions of who to choose to sing and perform and how they chose who to leave out. Harry Connick Jr. seemed like a natural choice for all the reasons we just mentioned. He seems, of all the people working today, to be the one that's most in the mindset, style-wise, of Frank Sinatra. There were a couple people. Now, the guy that I mentioned earlier who looked like Abraham Lincoln. Steve, you didn't see the special, did you? You didn't watch the Frank Sinatra special, did you?
I did not,
no. You didn't see it? There was a guy who came out a couple times, and he had a very bushy beard and a stovetop hat, and I thought it was Abe Lincoln, but it was not Abe Lincoln. Several people letting me know that was Zach Brown, whose work I'm not familiar with.
Oh, the Zach Brown Band.
Is he from the Zach Brown Band? Well, the name would imply, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if they've done anything in the past couple of years, but they're huge.
Country Western, that type of music,
I think they filled up Wrigley Field one year.
People loved him, and he did a good job. I just, like everybody else, I'm like, oh, that I know him, I know her, I know him. I didn't know who he was. We got a couple more calls. Let's talk to Mary. Hey, Mary, it's WGN. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine, and I just wanted to tell you the way the guys were dressed was fabulous.
Yeah, everybody really...
I honored Frank Sinatra way because he always wore a tuxedo.
Yep.
I thought it was one of the best shows.
Didn't you love when they showed clips of him, whenever they would show a clip from Frank Sinatra? Now, keep in mind, just by virtue of being Frank Sinatra, he's automatically cool. You can't take that away from him. Yeah. But whenever he would talk to somebody, he'd go, now here's a cat I think you're really going to enjoy. Like, he would always say cat and stuff.
Yeah, he was so cool.
He really was.
He heard the musicians, and, I mean, he had such respect for everybody.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, but the way they were dressed compared to the way the kids dress now, the torn jeans and everything, to see all these guys dressed up, Adam Levine, I mean, it was fabulous.
Well, that's the thing, is guys that are usually in a much more casual manner, because it was Frank Sinatra, they showed the respect that he deserved, didn't they?
Respect. Yep. That's what we need.
Yep.
More
so
respect.
More respect, Mary. It's so true. Have a great holiday.
I have to tell you, I love your show, and I love Wendy. So
oh.
Make sure you tell her.
Well, she'll be back soon, I promise. Take care, Mary. Thanks so much. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
They showed Steve. This was, this is my favorite Sinatra era, is when he was doing Rat Pack stuff and he was in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And they showed him, and it's all that, it's Sammy Davis Jr. and it's Dean Martin and it's Peter Lawford and Joey Bishop. And there's a picture of them in front of, I want to say, it must be the Sands. I think that's where they did this particular run of the Rat Pack, and it's them just in their prime, and you look at it, and even though it's in black and white, it's so stirring because it's that lost era that will never be duplicated. And you see those five guys in Las Vegas, and they all have cigarettes and their collars are open. You just say to yourself, who was more on top of the world at that particular moment than those five guys?
I just watched over the weekend the movie Trumbo.
Oh, did you? Yeah,
which is set in the same era. I mean, it's a very different story. It's about the Hollywood
Dalton
blacklist,
Trumbo, but, the writer.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's but same. I love the style of it, the way everyone was dressed and everything.
It's just a cool that we'll never see again. I don't know. We've got Leo on the line. Leo, thanks for calling in. What's up?
I was just telling your guy that I hated that program.
You hated the show?
I couldn't enjoy it.
Why? How
I
come?
Sinatra, but I didn't like the presentation they were doing.
Any particular reason?
Every time they sang, I was trying to hear Sinatra, and I couldn't hear them.
Can I tell you something, Leo?
They were all lovely. Even Harry Connick Jr., who I love.
Yeah.
And he does a good Sinatra. He reminds me of Sinatra when he sings.
Yep.
Even his was off.
I said to my wife as we were watching it last night, I'm shocked that they don't have more vintage footage of Frank singing his own songs. It was really cool to hear everybody there singing, but I thought more of the time should have probably been devoted to him actually singing his songs, right?
Same here. That's the way I felt.
Yep, yep. All right, well,
yeah,
thank...
I had to shut it off. I couldn't stand it.
Enough anymore. Of this, you said. Well, thank you, Leo. Have a good holiday. My parents, Steve, at some point toward the end of Frank's career, we were all in Las Vegas, and he was performing at a hotel, and somebody got them tickets. My dad was there on some sort of a business trip, and they got my dad and my mom tickets, and they went to see him, and they said at that point in his career, because he was older at that point, he was,
sure,
I think, in his early 80s when they saw him, he had a stack of index cards, and he would just kind of read all the lyrics off the cards. He was still singing, but it wasn't like the glory days where he just... He remembered the lyrics. He had them there on index cards.
The glory days when he remembered the lyrics?
Right. Yeah. Right. And my mom had said, but because it's Frank Sinatra, even just seeing him standing there, just reading lyrics off of index cards, off of 3x5 cards, was better than anybody else she had ever seen in Las Vegas, because it was him. That kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, I would. I mean, I wish I'd seen him just once, even.
Oh, absolutely. Well, he just had, it's funny, because as I'm watching him, I'm thinking to myself, there were guys who sang better, and there were guys with more stage presence, and there were guys who had bigger hits. I mean, you could go down the line and go, that guy's better. You could say those guys were better. She was better. Maybe that guy's better. But he just had everything together at once. Plus, surprisingly, because they throw him in movies, and you go, okay, how's this going to end up? He was a really good actor, too. Really good.
And he was in The Godfather, sort of.
Well, indirectly. Not really. There was a character sort of based on him, but it wasn't really him. But yeah, he was kind of in The Godfather, kind of. But the ones, like, see him in Manchurian Candidate, you'll forget that he's such a great singer. You'll just go, boy, can this guy act. There's a bunch of movies like that where he's just that good. Smokey and the Bandit 2, not among them. That was later on.
He was in that?
Oh, no, I'm wrong. Cannonball Run.
Okay.
There's even a little scene in Cannonball Run. He did, like, toward the end, he would do favors for friends. Burt Reynolds was a friend of his, so he did a favor for him. Tony Danza was on Who's the Boss? So Tony Danza blows in a call to Frank Sinatra, and he just showed up on Who's the Boss for an episode. So toward the end, he was helping out friends a little bit. He wasn't concerned about being a great actor, but boy, was he good. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. Steve with the news. Later on, noted pet expert Steve Dale will be by. It's Bill F. Wendy's on vacation for the day, and it's WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill F. Wendy Snyder has the day off. She is expected back tomorrow. Steve, I hate to put you on the spot like this. I know you've had no time to prepare. Take a minute. Think about your answer. Do you remember what the best lie is that you ever told your children? You need a minute? You can have a minute if you want a minute.
Boy, I don't know what that would be. Maybe the next one.
whichever right, lie you tell them next
getting better
will
at
be
it.
The best. The reason I thought about this is we've got noted pet expert Steve Dale coming in, and I've told this story. I won't tell you all the details.
May I just say Sans a llama? I saw him in the hallway.
He did not bring his llama.
He did not have the llama.
Oh, that's disappointing. Well, we'll still have him on. Okay. We'll figure something out. I'm not, this is common knowledge, I guess, if you listen to the show with any regularity. I'm not what you'd call a pet person. I'm not a fan of the dogs. I don't really like the cats. Fish mm-hmm. don't do anything for me. I don't enjoy rabbits. Squirrels, I'm not a fan of. I don't like beavers. I don't like porpoises. I don't like emus, llamas. You name it, I don't like them. I'm not a pet person. Love them in the wild, just don't like them in the house. When my daughters were little, they desperately wanted a pet of some kind, probably a dog, but they would have negotiated to something else. And I explained to them that sadly, because of the zoning laws on our block, we lived in an area that did not allow pets. I wanted a pet, but because of the crazy laws there, we could not have one.
So you explained to the girls that it just wasn't fair, that you were on their side?
It's so unfair.
Right.
That a family, a hardworking family, if you count my wife anyway, shouldn't be allowed to have a dog or something. I would write a letter.
Right. It's sad. It's unfair.
It's just sad. So what I found here, unless have you thought of one?
I don't
is there
have,
one
I can't
nothing
think of,
in particular?
Not that I didn't. I'm not trying to pretend that, you know, I'm above that by any means.
I also told him, you know how in every house there's a switch? This, I don't know why this happens in everybody's house, but somewhere in your house is a switch that doesn't seem to turn anything on or off. I told them, I said that that switch controls the house across the street, that if you move the, that up and down, that their lights will flicker. Well, then we shouldn't do it. No, don't do it. Their lights will go on and off. Well, over at MSN.com, they had a bunch of people tell what the biggest lie they ever told their kids was. Most of these are awful. I mean, the one I did on my kids with not being able to have a pet is bad, but not compared to these. If you've got one, 312-981-7200, give us a call. Here's a lady named Anne. Here's what she wrote in. I told my kids that the ice cream van music only plays when the ice cream man has run out of ice cream. So when you hear him coming down your street playing a song, don't think he's got ice cream. If he's playing the song, there's no ice cream to be had. Stay away from the truck.
Kathy O'Malley told her kids that was the music truck.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? They don't have ice cream. They just play music. They just drive around town playing music. Here's a woman who writes, my kids think that we have hidden cameras in our house. So when they're trying to fib about something, we tell them that we will check the cameras. And then they spill the beans every time. That seems obtrusive. Speed bumps. This is mean. Good for this person. This is what they told them. We told our kids that speed bumps have children under them. They were holding their adult's hand. They weren't holding their adult's hand, so no one saw them, and then they got run over.
Wow.
Then the road crew covered them up and painted them as a yellow speed bump.
That's evil.
My kids always held my hand after that outside. That is evil. Because every time, for the rest of your life now, even though when you're a kid and you figure out that that's not true, every time you see a speed bump, you'll go, oh, that's so sad.
You see that little kid at 50, like, so hand sad. Sneaking out to hold someone's
right,
hand.
Anybody's hand. Right. Anybody. Here's a good one. After watching Barney every day, twice a day, I told my son that Barney had died. That's awful. Most of these are awful. I told my kids that I sat outside. Oh, this is deceitful. This isn't so much awful as it is deceitful. I told my child that I sat outside her preschool all day just in case she needed me.
That's hurtful.
Right? Well, if something horrible had happened and she needed her mom in a quick instant, then it would have been horrible. She would have realized her mom was lying
to her.
Tell
the kid to buck up. It's a cruel world. Get used to it.
Right. This is the way the rest of life is going to be.
Mom's not always going to be there.
So true. Tracy, you're on WGN. Did you have a lie that you told your kids? A terrible, terrible lie?
Yes.
What did you tell them?
I told my son I took our pet rabbit to a farm. And I took it to anti-cruelty, and they killed it.
Now, do you know how common this is? So many parents, and our own Kevin fell victim to this once. So many parents tell their kids.
Yeah, and I think my mom's listening right now.
Oh, is she?
And I've even asked her if they were just fibbing to me. They still hold true to the...
That they took your dog to a farm when he got older.
That's what they say.
But Tracy, it's one of those things you have to do because it eases your child into the idea. You don't want to say point blank that the pet you've had for years is no longer with us. But if a kid believes it's at a farm, they'll be happier, won't they?
Yes, and he's 34 and still believes
it. Oh, he still believes it. Okay, good. You're good at what you do, Tracy. You're very good. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye. Let's take another call. Now, Steve, you don't think that falls under mean, do you? It's a little white lie. That's all it is. It's fine. Lisa, hi.
Hi. You know, I thought I was a horrible parent until I heard about the speed bump.
Yeah, that's terrible. That is terrible.
I have three children who are, you know, they were born within 3.5 years of each other. And so I had a bunch of little kids. And when we went to restaurants, I would point up to the camera if there was a security camera, or I would pretend like there was one, like, in a pot,
yeah,
you know, a plant, and say, there's a little old lady in the back of the restaurant who watches all the children. And if you don't behave, she takes you in back and makes you do dishes or locks you up until mom and dad are done eating.
Oh, that's beautiful. And it worked, didn't it?
They were wonderful.
Oh, every time.
Every restaurant we went into, they looked for the camera.
Well, that becomes a game unto itself. That's perfect.
I think so.
Well done. Oh, you're good. Thanks so much, Lisa. Have a good day.
Mm-hmm.
Take care. Bye. Let me get one more in before the break. If you want to give us a call, we're trying to figure out what the best lie is that you ever told your kids. Now, Diane, you have a slightly different version of this, don't you? You remember something your mom told you.
I do. I was in grade school, and my father took me to the Golden Gloves at our local armory.
Yeah.
And when I got home, I was told that my Petey Bird parrot had died of the flu. I was in grade school. I was 21 years old at the Thanksgiving table when my brothers and sisters and the rest of the family decided to tell me that Petey Bird got out of the cage and my mother sucked him up with the vacuum cleaner because we had those big, high, tall ceilings.
Oh, no.
That is the truth.
No. So even
Petey
at 20...
Petey Bird got sucked up in the vacuum cleaner.
But at 21, hearing this, your thoughts were what? You felt deceived, right? You've lived your whole life. You've lived a lie your whole life.
I kind of did. My poor little Petey Bird.
That's terrible. It's awful. Diane, thanks. Have a great holiday.
You're welcome.
Take care. Bye.
Bill.
Bye. Yes, Kevin.
My mother just texted me.
What did she say?
Confirming that they gave our dog away to a farm. She's still standing by it.
Now, you know that didn't happen.
She's
you
listening.
You know it didn't happen.
I want to give her the benefit of the doubt here.
This is the, I would say.
She said it's true unless Dad lied to me too.
That's what happened.
Okay.
That, believe me when I tell you, I know so many people, I have met so many people over the years that have a similar story about how when they were 6 years old, Butterscotch went to a farm somewhere in Itasca where he's still alive today. And you just look at the person and go, you really believe this, right? There's no way. You've seen farms.
Impossible.
Are they filled with dogs?
There's a dog farm.
There's always one dog.
In Elmhurst.
Really? All right. I think they're lying to you. I really do. Here's a good one. Tell me if you think this is mean or not. Actually, let me rephrase that. Tell me how mean you think this one is. This is lies that parents have told to their kids. I told my kids that Santa Claus was fat because he eats naughty children. Wow.
It's kind of along the Krampus thing.
Well, it is. It's like the movie Krampus. You're right. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. Do you have some? What lies have you told your kids or what lies did your parents tell you? I'm sure it was for the good of everybody. I'm positive. 312-981-7200. Give us a call or a text about those lies. We'll be back after this. It's Bill Left. Wendy Snyder's taking the day off on WGN. It's Bill Left on WGN. Wendy Snyder has the day off. We're talking about lies that parents have told their kids. What's the worst lie that a parent has told a child? Give us a call or a text at 312-981-7200. There's a great text here from somebody says that my kids had a lot of loud, annoying toys, and I told them that those toys only accepted Canadian batteries and that we didn't have any Canadian batteries. That'll get the job done. I love this one. This is the candy that is up front at the register at stores. You've all seen this when you go to any grocery store. They've got all these rows of delicious candy right there as you're checking out. The candy up at the register at those stores is old and left over. And the reason it's at the front of the store is that so manufacturers can come and pick it up. You're not allowed to buy it. Let me get some calls in. Hey, Kim?
Yes.
What is the worst lie? Now, is this one that you told your kids or that your parents told you?
I told my kids.
What was it?
When we would go shopping at the department stores and they'd be running around and acting goofy and stuff, I would tell them that the mannequins that were there were people that had broken something and couldn't pay for it.
Ah, that's so cruel. That's so cruel, but it worked, right?
They had to run around a lot.
I love that. And at what point did they realize that maybe what you're telling them wasn't quite right?
Oh, it didn't take too long, but still, it
worked.
It got the job done.
Beautiful. Well done, Kim. Thanks so much. Have a good day.
You too.
Take care. Bye. Let's check in with John. John, what's the lie that you told your kids?
Hey, Bill, we told our kids that when the Tooth Fairy would forget to show up, that there'd be there was a big boxing match or a hockey game going on in town and buy us a few more hours.
It took precedent because at a boxing match or a hockey game, a lot of teeth are going to be missing, right?
You got it.
Oh, it's logical. It all makes sense. Thank you, John. Well done.
Yep,
take care. Bye. Let me get to Jeannie. Is that you? Did I find you?
Jeannie?
Yeah, is that you? Hi, Jeannie. How are you?
Hi. I am well, thank you. We had to have our dog put down, and so we brought her to the neighborhood animal hospital, and lo and behold, my daughter gets into high school and gets a part-time job there, and after she's been working there for a couple months, she said, now, how does that program work where the people bring their dogs here and, you know, like, I'll help bringing them to the farm in Iowa.
Oh, no.
And her boss just burst out laughing. Oh. She came home. Her face was beet red. She's like, I'm never believing you and Dad ever again.
You ruined the bond of trust. It's over.
Yep.
Oh, that's hysterical.
Jeannie, I think she has finally forgiven us now that she's
30. I hope
30.
So. Oh, I hope so. Jeannie, thanks so much. Have a good day. There is a text. I hope my 39-year-old son is not listening, because as we pointed out, many, many kids have believed, thanks to their parents, that their dogs or cats or whatever pet you had are now off at a farm just living life the best they could ever imagine. Not always that way. Sometimes parents fudge that just a little bit. Let me get another call or two in. Pam, thanks for holding on. Pam?
Yes, I'm here.
Did you have a lie? What's the lie?
Yeah, my daughter, when she was about 5, she wanted one of those expensive, you know, cars that have the big batteries.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I hate to tell you this, but Santa's really poor. And what we have to give him, you know, make a deposit into account every year for you to get presents. And there's not enough money in that account. There never will be.
You told her Santa Claus is poor? Did you feel even a little bit guilty as you were explaining that Santa has hit upon hard times? Did you feel a little guilty?
A little.
Just a little, but it didn't change you.
No.
All right, good. You got to have a story and stick to it. You did it well. Thanks, Pam.
Yeah, I did with a straight face.
That's the way to play it. Thanks so much. Bye.
Sure. Bye.
Here's one. Oh, this is cruel. Why would you do this to a kid? My son ate my chocolate women's vitamins, and so I told him that he would grow breasts. He was terrified. That seems a little rough. This one, oh, I wish Wendy was here for this one, because she can't stand Caillou. For people who don't know what Caillou is, this is a kids' TV show about a bald, whiny kid from Canada who's always complaining about things. Wendy, not a fan of Caillou. I sat through a few episodes with my daughters. This is a fun one. From Heather, she says, after a few episodes of Caillou, I told my daughter that she had made him up in her imagination and that there wasn't a show like that at all. Wow. Wow. That's a little deep. Let me check in with, where's Kevin? Kevin, did I find you? Is that you?
Yeah, it's Kevin.
Kevin, what have you got? What's the lie?
Well, every time that my daughters would, you know, come home and they, you know, they say that they had a problem, they weren't feeling well, or they had a bump here or a scrape there or whatever, you know, I'd look at it and I'd say, oh, yeah, my aunt had that. And they go, really? What happened? I go, oh, well, she's dead now.
Oh, good. That's nice. Thank you, Kevin. Take care. Steve, did you notice that there's a running theme in many of these lies, and it involves death?
of animals, of children, and speed bumps?
A lot of times it's kids. A lot of the times it's animals. But the one theme that seems to play out over and over and over again is that somebody has died a horrible, horrible death in these lies. I can't read that one. I told my daughter that she was allergic to soda. Well, that doesn't seem that bad. I think that's you're probably helped your kid there. That's not so bad. That Mickey Mouse had to call. Oh, this is cruel. I told my child that Mickey Mouse had to call and personally invite him to Disney World, or we would not be able to go. I used to tell my son that he needed to brush his teeth really, really good, because if he didn't, the tooth fairy would not pay for clean teeth. What? Does that make sense? I don't know if I understand that one. That the sugar fairy that came on Hollywood night took, I'm sorry, on Halloween night, the sugar fairy that came on Halloween night,
different kind of sugar fairy.
Yes, it is. Was going to take half of their candy. What? No, what's the purpose of that? Just so that the kids don't have as much candy,
sure,
I guess?
Sure, so you go in and you steal the candy.
Oh, all right, so there's stolen candy involved. All right, that's better. I told my kid that the movie Matilda is a true story, and he's lucky that he doesn't have to go to that school. Did you ever see Matilda?
I don't think so.
Goes to a very, very harsh school.
Is that not the one Rhea Perlman?
Yeah, and Danny DeVito, okay, that's Matilda. Yeah, and the little girl from Miracle on 34th Street is in that, too, from the remake of it. Let me see if I can get this one. I believe I know who this is. Mrs. Beards, is that you?
It is.
My friend from a long, long time ago. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Now, I know you.
This is funny.
You would not lie to your children. That's impossible.
Well, I had to.
What happened?
Well, you know my daughter, and you know her well.
Jen.
Yes. I didn't want to name the name, but okay.
We will not give her actual name. Let's say her name is Jennifer.
No, she's married now, so it's a different name.
Oh, it's fine then.
Okay. So anyhow, yeah. So when she was young, very young, and she was having a very hard time sleeping at night this one night, and I wanted to go to bed, and I was really tired.
Yeah.
And you have to understand that, right? She was afraid the house was going to burn down.
Oh.
So we told her that the electrical outlets, if they sensed a fire, they would squirt out water and put the fire out.
Oh.
Now, she believed that until she was in her 20s, I think.
Those are the best ones, though. If you can get your kid to believe them well into their adulthood years, you've done something right.
I don't know.
Very funny. Very funny.
It was a blow to her. We said, no, that really doesn't happen, you know.
Good. I'm proud of you. Thanks, Mrs. Beards. Have a good holiday.
You too.
Take care. Thanks. Bye. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We've got news coming up. And then after the news, our friend, noted pet expert Steve Dale, llama free, unfortunately. But still, we'll talk to Steve and find out what's going on with him. Stick around. It's Bill Left. Wendy Snyder has the day off. And it's WGN. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Left. Wendy Snyder is off for the day. She'll be back, we believe, tomorrow. And I'm now going to attempt what I consider to be the greatest segue in radio history as I talk about the last segment and then introduce noted pet expert Steve Dale. We were just talking about lies that parents have told their kids, you know, I'm sure for their children's own good, but sometimes parents need to lie to their kids. And we told the story just a few moments ago about so many people, including our own Kevin's parents, who explain, you know, as a pet is getting older, that instead of the pet dying, they tell the kids that they have taken the dog or the cat to a farm, a special dog farm or a cat farm, so that the dog can live forever there at this this farm. And many, many people believe this. Steve, I hope you've heard this story before. Many people, they don't want to explain to their kids that the dog has died or is about to die. We just say, oh, they're at a farm now. They're picking apples on a farm. Well, then this text comes in. Bill, I just realized at 77 years of age that my parents lied to me about my dog going to a farm when I was 7 years old. I never questioned it until you just brought up the subject. So for 70 years, Steve, this person has believed wholeheartedly that mom and dad were telling them the truth, only to discover that they're dirty, filthy liars. It's awful.
I hear that all the time.
Do you? I bet you do.
I do. And I talked to more than one psychologist about this because I know about pets, don't know about people.
Yeah.
And the psychologists say it's a really bad thing to do.
To lie to your kids and tell them that the dog is at a dog farm.
Because years later, as illustrated by the texter, it comes back to haunt people and you kind of never forgive your parents for doing that.
Yep.
I mean, here's someone you love, and kids do love, that's not too strong a word,
right?
Their dog, cat, or rabbit. And then you find out that, oh my gosh, this is not really what happened.
But, you know, and again, I'm mixing something that I'm not familiar with, but I imagine for a lot of kids, that may be their first taste of the fact that that death does happen at some point is when a dog or a cat dies. And a lot of parents feel, oh, maybe my 3-year-old or 4-year-old isn't quite ready to know the truth yet.
Well, I think there are other ways to say what happened.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's the same.
What would you recommend? What would you say?
Well, first of all, I would say get a goldfish in the first place because it's more likely to happen. It's easier to practice on something that isn't quite as important in your life as a dog or a cat. And even kids don't have quite the same bond with a goldfish.
Right.
And the goldfish is, sadly, likely to succumb. There are exceptional goldfish out there that I know that
live
are
a
like
long the, life.
Oh, they're like George Burns. They go on forever. They smoke cigars. It's amazing.
They do movies with John Denver. It's the weirdest thing.
These goldfish are incredible. But by and large, goldfish aren't going to make it. So it's a good idea to have a starter pet, I think.
Right.
A pet rat, which people say.
A pet rat?
They're great first pets, actually.
Why? Really, why would you recommend
but
a pet rat?
The sad part is they only last a couple of years at best.
No, what is it about a rat that would make for a good pet?
They're brilliant. They're interactive.
Yeah.
More so than you would think. And I said brilliant. They're really smart.
Are they?
Yeah. I mean, they're like Cocker Spaniels with a different kind of tail. I mean, they're really...
That should be their ad campaign. I think you just found an ad campaign for the rat.
It's not a... So,
did you have a pet rat at some point?
No.
You did not.
My friend did, and they were awesome.
Really?
They would come, like, run up your arm while you're, like, playing cards, and they'd sit on our shoulders. It was so cool.
Oh.
Very, very fun.
If a rat ran up my arm, I don't care who's listening and what town you live in, you would hear me scream wherever you're listening.
I'm sure.
I would scream so loud.
Even in Costa Rica, they'd
yes.
hear you.
Oh, it's so funny you bring up Costa Rica.
Yes.
I know you knew we were going. I told you before the trip.
I think your daughter's amazing.
Terry and Kylie is.
Explain what she does.
She's taking a gap year between high school and college, and she's doing various good deeds. And part of this gap year was she spent 5 weeks in Costa Rica helping the leatherhead turtle. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
The leatherhead turtle. A very, very rare endangered turtle.
They're a sea turtle.
Yeah. So she was helping them
a big one too.
On the beaches of Costa Rica for 5 weeks.
That's
She's
wonderful.
Back now. But what I wanted to tell you about Costa Rica is I took a picture because when I came back, I won't go into great detail on the story, we were there by a tropical rainforest in Costa Rica, and things come out of the jungle that I've never seen before. I've never heard of before. There's all these animals and insects because you're right there in the forest.
Yeah.
And stuff comes out, and I never knew. I didn't know how to react. I didn't know if I should be afraid of it, if it would attack me, whatever. So I'm going to show you
a
picture.
You were seriously worried about being afraid of animals before you left. Did it work out?
I was fine.
Were you attacked by any wild monkeys?
Well, the only thing I'm going to tell you, and it has to do with this animal, I'm going to show you, and I'll let you describe what we're looking at. You may even know what these are. I'd never seen them before. The animal I showed you traveled in packs of about...
These are coati.
Are they coati? Now explain what that is. What is a coati?
They're relatives of the raccoon, and depending on which book you read, they're either very close relatives or somewhat distant relatives. They're very raccoon-like. They live in what are called bands or small groups, which
about
you just
about 10 to 14. Yeah.
That's actually about right. And they make these little chattering sounds. They look kind of like raccoons with little rings around their tails.
Yeah.
And they come in different color combinations depending on the region of the world in which you're in. They're even in America, by the way.
They
US.
Have them here?
Yeah, in the South, you know. So in Texas, in New Mexico, Arizona, there are some coati. Certainly in Mexico and all the way down through Central America. They live with raccoons in the same sort of environment. They compete for the same sort of foods.
Yeah.
So sometimes if you have both of them in the same environment, they don't like each other very much.
Oh.
And they're very dexterous. They use their paws or their hands in ways that we do. And they learn, they're smart, and they learn to beg for food from people who feed them.
And that's exactly what we were experiencing where we were staying, because they explained at the hotel, we prefer that you not feed them, because once you do feed them, they stick around for a good long time. They want more food. And they would do this thing, like I said, there were 10 or 14 of them at a time, where they'd all be kind of searching the same kind of square yardage for food, and then they would start fighting, and they'd get pretty vicious with each other. So you'd look and you'd go, boy, I'd hate to tangle with one of these, because they do get pretty vicious with each other.
They're not small. They're shaped a bit differently than raccoon, but they're about the same size.
I'm inaccurate, but I was calling them monkey raccoons, because they were part...
It's kind of a good
they're
description.
Somewhere in the middle of a monkey and a raccoon. Yeah. All right, so one of the days, Steve, I'm walking on a path near our hotel, because the hotel was kind of far off from where our room was, and I'm walking down this path, and every time I had ever seen these, tell me the name again? What are they
called?
Coati. Every time I had ever seen them, there were a bunch of them at one time. But this time, as I'm walking down a path, another one comes up coming the opposite way, so it's me walking one way, the coati walking the other, and I go, well, this shouldn't be much of an issue, because I'm 5'11", and it's... Six inches, two and a half feet
or something.
I should get the better of this, but it just starts looking at me like, if you want to start something, I'm here and you're here. It's just me and you.
Just wants food, I'm sure.
I keep walking towards it and thinking nothing of it, and then all of a sudden, in all the trees surrounding me, I hear. They were all lined up in the trees as if to say, if you mess with one of us, you mess with all of us. And I walked around. I walked completely around the hotel to get to my room.
You walked all the way back to the United States right. to avoid.
Came home that day. My family stayed, and I came home. But they wouldn't have hurt me, would they? They're not meat eaters, are they?
No. Well, yeah, they'll eat fish. They'll eat insects.
Yeah.
Anything they can catch that's very, very small. So perhaps a mouse.
Oh.
If they can catch it. But other than that, no, they're certainly not going to go after a person. Yeah. However, here's what happens is they're so accustomed to being fed, they become bold.
Yeah.
Individuals become bold, like this guy.
Yeah.
And they will walk right up to you. And if that happens, and then they feel they're wild animals. So for some reason, they feel threatened. And what threatens a coati and what threatens us? Two different things.
I would imagine.
So, yeah. So if they feel cornered or threatened, they can bite, you know?
Well, there were so many animals there in the region that we saw, what they call the Jesus lizard. You know what this is? These are these lizards that can run across the water.
Oh, the ballast lizard.
Yeah,
the
that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so they can run across the water. And then we saw something that looked like either Pumbaa or Timon. I don't know who's
a
who.
What?
In Lion King, they've got those two singing and dancing animals. And although the ones we saw didn't sing or dance.
Oh.
We stayed for a while and we're like, this doesn't sing or dance.
Wasn't worth the cover charge.
This is stupid. Yeah, why do we pay $8.50? So there were all these animals and I don't know.
What kind of cat did you see then? An ocelot?
Maybe. I don't.
If you saw a jaguar, consider yourself very lucky.
Well, they do have them there.
Yeah, they're
they
hard
do
to,
have them
they're
there.
They're nocturnal, for one thing, and there aren't many around because they're disappearing.
But I never know when I encounter an animal like that in its home field. I don't know which ones will just look at me and go, no, it's not even worth the effort. I needed somebody next to me at all time to go, that one would kill you if you looked at it the wrong way.
Well, I should have come with you.
You should have come with, next time to come with.
I would have loved to have gone with.
All right,
I've never
time.
Been to Costa Rica.
Next time. Oh, it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Oh. Everyone says that. People are great.
Yeah.
Everyone says that.
Yep.
Is that true?
Yep.
We just came back from Mexico. I was in Puerto Vallarta at an animal shelter, and that's wrong to say. It's not a shelter. It's a sanctuary. For dogs and cats that are found in the street or in abused situations. That is amazing. What they do to rehab these animals in some ways, anyway, exceeds what we do in America. I mean,
really?
It's a great model, and it's incredible what they do there. It also provides a model for their local community of what can be done.
Yeah, yeah. Noted pet expert Steve Dale is here, and I know a bunch of you have questions, so we'll get to those next. We're at 312-981-7200. You can call in or text in. It's Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder's got the day off on WGN. All right, it's Bill Leff, along with noted pet expert Steve Dale. Noted pet expert Steve Dale, there are many, many calls for you. Shall we take them?
I'm itching to take some.
Let's do just that.
You know why I said that?
Because
we just heard Cat Scratch Fever.
From Ted Nugent, absolutely.
I'm Dawn, not as quick as you are. But
no,
I,
you're
I
very quick.
No,
you're very
no,
quick.
No.
Dawn, noted pet expert Steve Dale is here. Did you have a question or comment for him?
I do. Hi.
Hi.
What is your recommendation for getting rid of and preventing fleas? I've heard terrible things about Frontline and Advantage, you know, causing seizures and stuff like that.
No. But, you know, first of all, that's not true. Secondly, see your veterinarian, not me. And thirdly, ask your veterinarian about this. There's new technology out there that I love. So I don't say anything bad about those products because they mostly really do. I said mostly, right?
Yeah.
And in this area, that's not true. So if you're in the Chicago area, they work. You know, so that's not the issue. But I like new technology. Who doesn't? If it's new iPhone, get it. Well, new flea technology, get it. Same thing. And this is new technology. One product is called Bravecto. And the nice thing about that is you don't need to apply it as often. Actually, it's a chewable that your pet takes.
Okay.
And ask your veterinarian about that. Or
Bravecto.
Bravecto.
Which was also your magician name the first time I ever saw you perform.
The
you
amazing were, Bravecto.
I remember
and,
that.
And also NexGard is another choice, NexGard. That's NexGard, also new technology.
Okay.
All right, Dawn, give it a shot. Thanks so much.
Okay.
Now, the good thing is she asked about fleas. It's important to beat the fleas, so that's appropriate.
Now, why did you say, you said in Chicago these will be effective?
There's
what does that mean?
There's some talk, and that in certain places where fleas are more than a little abundant, like in Florida, and some other places in the South, that the fleas have actually built up some immunity to some of the older products.
Oh.
We don't know that that's the case or not, but it's not a worry in Chicago, for sure. And secondly, even in those places, if you do it smart and do it right, I believe you're fine.
All right. Noted pet expert Steve Dale is here to take your calls or questions. Greg is on the line. Hi, Greg. What have you got for us?
Hi there. How you guys doing?
Couldn't be better.
Good. Steve, I have a question for you. I have a 10-year-old Maltese, me, and she's formed cataracts in both of her eyes, and you know her vision is very not so good as of now. I understand it's a little pricey to you know to help her. Is there any options that I have? Other options available?
Well, again, for that one, not really the one to ask a veterinary ophthalmologist. And there is such a thing, by the way. Veterinarians are specialized in eye care for animals. And there are some available. Chicago Veterinary Emergency Specialty Center has two or three of them that are right there. And they can tell you what the options are. I don't believe reading glasses will work. And for some dogs, it's just kind of the way it is, you know. The dogs, though, do adjust really, really well. You know, no one's told them, and this has happened over a course of time.
Yeah.
So as long as there's no pain involved, and generally there is not, you know, you could see with these older animals, their eyes are cloudy. And,
right.
And at night, you could especially see the difference.
Yeah.
Their night vision isn't as good, but they don't need to drive, you know. So depending on how bad it is, I don't know that your dog is as concerned as you are, but definitely, definitely seeing your veterinarian first and then asking about a referral to a veterinary ophthalmologist would be able to tell you far more than I can.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it. Good luck with everything.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Happy holidays.
You too.
No, he said that wrong. It should be happy holidays.
Happy, how does that go again?
Holidays.
Happy holidays,
yes.
Says noted pet expert Steve Dale. Pat, go ahead. Do you have a question for Steve Dale?
Hey, Pat.
Hello?
Yeah, hi. Go ahead.
Hi, Steve and Bill.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a rescue cat who I inherited from my daughter. Now, we were gone for 2 weeks, and I had to have her boarded. When I came back, she would no longer use her litter box. I am beside myself. My husband is not a happy camper, and he said, if I can't get her to use her litter box, she's got to go.
Is this the only cat? Is this the only cat you have at home?
Yes.
Where's the litter box?
Downstairs in the movie room.
Okay. So how old's the cat?
You know, I'm not sure.
About?
Approximately 2 years,
oh,
maybe?
Young cat. Okay. So still, having the litter box downstairs is not a good idea anyway, long term, because when cats get older, I mean, if grandma had to go downstairs to use her litter box, she may say, the heck with it. And sometimes
that's
with
a
older,
beautiful image you just put in our heads, by the way,
much.
Steve. Thank you for that.
No
that
problem.
Beautiful.
But there's other scary stuff happening in the basement, like the laundry
of
is
course.
Going on, you know, and it's away well, from you. So cats do like litter boxes. Here's the catch 22. They like their privacy, just like we do.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they don't want to be like miles away, and for a cat being down in the basement is kind of miles away, especially
right.
for a cat who, well, you've been without for a while, and for cats, change is something they don't like. So here the cat was, oh, here I'm there at this place, now I'm there at this place. So I want you to add a couple of litter boxes on the main floor. Long term, you probably don't have to keep them both, but that's, and scooping every day, being very meticulous as cats are. And also check out this product. It's called Feel Away. It can lower the stress in cats. It's a knockoff of a pheromone, a naturally occurring pheromone. There's no side effect or anything. And you could put a collar around the cat, or it can come in a diffuser, you know, that you plug into the wall. That is what I'd recommend, and you can get that anywhere pet products are sold.
Oh,
good luck, Pat.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Have a nice holiday. Take care.
Happy holiday.
Oh, you
she's
got Pat
good.
Doing it now, Steve. You got Pat doing it.
The world should.
Thanks,
be.
Pat. We only have a minute here, Steve,
yeah.
but I know that there's a very important event coming up that you wanted to talk about. Have at it.
It's one of my favorite events of the year, and I have had so many of these. It's called Lights of Love. It's a Treehouse Humane Society, and it's this coming Saturday. And what we do is we honor those pets that have been lost over the course of this past year, dogs, cats, or frankly, people too. And it's really beautiful. So you have instantly thousands of Italian lights that are lit up, one representing every dog, cat,
oh,
or
nice.
Person,
yeah.
or pet turtle,
yeah.
or rabbit that has passed away, whatever it is. And
yeah.
I read something called The Rainbow Bridge. It's a poem about meeting our pets again on the other side. It's a sweet event, something I like. It's a free event, although making a donation to the nonprofit Treehouse Humane Society is a great idea. It's a 1212 West Carmen. I'll be doing my thing there at around 6 p.m., The open house itself starts at about 4 with, in fact, tours of the shelter and all that. You can check it all out on my blog, chicagonow.com/Steve Dale.
That's the best place to find you, and everything you're involved in is at that blog event, address. Can you get me a deal on some Provecto? I need Provecto.
I'm scratching. I understand.
See what you can find.
Yes.
Steve, always good to see you. Thanks so much for stopping by. We appreciate it.
And of course, to you.
Yes.
And all your loved ones.
Yes.
And your rabbit.
Thank you, Steve.
Happy holidays.
Thank you. You know, it's going to take me a month to shake that grandma going downstairs to use the litter box. I'm glad you brought that up.
You don't know. Yeah.
Thank you, Steve.
Be careful.
A quick break. We've got news next. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder away for the day, and it's WGN.
I'd like to build the world a home and furnish it with love. Grow apple trees.
This is WGN, our new format. Of course, all hippie music. We're going to play all hippie music for you now. Earlier in the show, I was telling you about an ad that Coca-Cola is apologizing for. That's the reason for that song. Coke is showing an ad, and it's on, Kevin has put it on our Facebook page. So if you have a minute and you have not seen this ad that Coke is saying that they've made a mistake about, you can see it for yourself over at our Facebook page. That's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on Facebook. You can watch it. Here's what you're going to see. And Steve, I don't know. We started to talk about this before, and then Anita Alvarez's press conference came, and we kind of sidestepped it a little bit. Have you seen this ad already? I'll describe it for anyone who has not seen it. But have you been able to see it, Steve? Steve? Oh, Steve is gone. All right. Here's what you get to see. It's in Mexico, and you see a lot of people doing their tasks, their jobs around Mexico. And they don't seem very happy in the jobs that they're doing or the lives that they have. And then they cut to a bunch of very clean-looking, scrubby, all-American white kids who come into their town in Mexico, and they bring them each a bottle of Coke and some red lights, and they build a giant Christmas tree. And just 30 seconds later, all these people who lived in Mexico who were not very happy with anything are extremely happy because white kids from America have come and given them Coca-Cola and have built a big tree.
And people have a problem with that?
As it turns out, Steve, some people found it offensive. It's very hard to imagine. Now, the first time I saw the ad, and have you seen it? I asked you earlier, and I couldn't get to you, but
no,
you've not seen it yet?
No, not yet.
It's at our Facebook page. It's at Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. You can watch it for yourself. I watched it, and I already knew. I was clued in by the story that there were a lot of people very upset with the commercial, so I kind of came in with it already knowing that there could be some problems. But I think if it was just on television, I think... And we don't get to see it here in the United States. It's not on our broadcast TV. It's in Spanish-speaking countries. I could see where somebody watching it for the first time would go, hey, life's not just that simple. Just because you throw in a bunch of all-American kids with big smiles and blonde hair and they give you a bottle of Coke, that's not going to make your life a whole lot better, I don't think. But really, if you watch almost any commercial, the product is going to change your life and make you extremely, extremely happy.
Right. I mean, those Doublemint twins never came with a pack of gum.
Never.
Right?
Not even one time.
Not one. There wasn't even a hidden.
Right. Right. So even Coke now is apologizing. Watch the ad for yourself. Don't just because they tell you you should be upset or anything. Watch it for yourself and you decide. But I could certainly see where somebody might raise an eyebrow. Here's what it says. Coca-Cola has apologized for an ad in Mexico that features urban youths visiting the nation's indigenous people, bringing them soda. The video shows sad faces of indigenous people with stats about how they feel rejected for not speaking Spanish, followed by happy youths shouting and creating something in a familiar red and white color scheme. That, of course, the pattern of Coca-Cola. Here's what it says. This Christmas, a group of young people decided to give something very special to the indigenous communities of Totonapec. That's the opening line of the video. It says it in Spanish on there. This according to Tech Insider. It says the something very special turns out to be a giant lighted Christmas tree. It's a Coca-Cola display right in the middle of their indigenous village. And of course, there's also plenty of bottles of soda being passed around. The video was roundly panned with an analysis over at a website called Telesur. They called it a painful metaphor of ongoing colonialism in the country. White kids storm the mixed indigenous community, and they're on a crusade.
despite the Coke bottles, they build a giant Coca-Cola tree for all to idolize. Now, earlier when we started to talk about this, I got two texts from people saying that there's nothing in there to lead you to believe that the scrubby, clean white kids with the blonde hair and the big smiles are American kids, that they could very possibly be from Mexico. I would invite you to watch this for yourself. I can't for a minute believe that anyone would think that those kids are also Mexican. They look like Malibu Ken and Malibu Barbie. Every one of them is just flawless and all-American looking as you could possibly be. And then you see the message of, look, we're here to save the day. Look, unhappy people of Mexico, we're here with Coca-Cola, and now that we're here, everybody can smile together. I consider this type of advertising... What, Steve?
Do you think Pepsi might be behind this?
Yes. Yes. No. Mr. Pibb, on the other hand. I consider
Mr.
this...
Mr. Pibb.
Mr. Pibb.
Again.
I consider this type of advertising... Did you ever hear from Mrs. Pibb anymore? Is she okay?
No, but I hope she's all right. Ran off with the doctor.
I hope. Oh, with Dr. Pepper?
Could be.
I consider this type of advertising an act of discrimination and racist, said indigenous lawyer Elviro Pablo, this according to Mashable.com. It also promotes the breakdown of the social fabric by trying to impose a consumer culture alien to this community. Now, when I see it, I think that the problem is that the message, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, the message I'm seeing when I see it is, look, unhappy Mexican people, your lives are not going all that well, but we, the clean, scrubby white kids of America, can save you just by smiling upon you and giving you a bottle of Coke. That's what it looks like to me. And I'm not one to usually bash Coke because I like the occasional Coca-Cola, but that's what it looks like to me. But he just says, this guy Pablo, Elvira Pablo just says, it's promoting the breakdown of our social fabric, imposing a consumer culture, meaning just the mere fact that you're bringing us Coca-Cola, that's the problem. But I think you could almost look at it on either layer and just say, somewhere something's not quite right. We've got a problem, and it's solved way too easily by all-American-looking white kids bringing us Coca-Cola.
So I'm looking at the commercial now, and what it seems to be is like, so it's like a service project, right?
Yes, yes.
Young urban white children.
Right.
They come with construction equipment and wheelbarrows, and they're going to help this poor community.
Right, and the way to best help them is just by giving them a small bottle of Coke.
Right.
That'll tie them over.
Building a wooden Coke Christmas tree.
Right, right. What could possibly go wrong? Now, I will say very, very quickly, and then we'll move on to other things. I do give Coke credit because rarely do you see a company of that stature just come right out and say, okay, even we admit we've probably gone a little bit too far on this. We apologize. Didn't mean to upset anybody. Weren't really thinking it out all the way through, but still have an enjoy a Coke from time to time. But we do apologize. We've made a grievous error.
Looked like there was one of the young urban white boys making a move on one of the indigenous
girls. I saw that,
too.
I saw that, too.
Right.
I did see that. And, Steve, did you see the part at the beginning that I mentioned earlier? Even amidst the sadness that they show at the beginning, the poverty, the town that's not doing too well, and all the unhappy workers, you do see one guy with what I would like to call the almost smile.
Yes.
Which is, you saw that, too.
I did.
I'm not completely despondent. I've got some joy in me. If only some kids would come by with Coke to release that smile.
He runs the building and loan in town.
He does.
Yeah.
He definitely does. They do say that. Hold on a second. Let me get a call in or two. We're at 312-981-7200. Let me get a call in. Hey, Dave? Dave, can
Hello?
You hear me? Hi, there you are. What's up?
Yeah, there was a guy, there was a bald-headed guy, we're talking probably the 70s or 80s, they used to do the Uncola commercial.
That would be Jeffrey Holder.
Oh, okay.
These are nuts. These are cola nuts. That guy?
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's in the same category as this other pop commercial, but, I mean, you know, it's all different.
Well, with that one, they were just going, I think what they were trying to do over at 7-Up was say, we found the most exotic-looking spokesman we can possibly find. Let him explain the difference between cola and the un-cola for you. Didn't you read it that way?
Yeah, pretty much. And, I mean, if Coke would have just stayed with the polar bears and the
right.
Christmas commercial, then
right.
Everybody would have been happy.
We'd all be a lot happier. So true. Thanks, Dave. Take care. Because polar bears, Steve, you and I have talked about this many times before. Polar bears enjoy nothing more than a refreshing Coca-Cola. It's their favorite thing in the world. You can't go wrong. If you're a polar bear with a bottle of Coke, you're a happy person. All right, let's take a break. We've got more stories to share. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Left. Wendy Snyder has the day off, and it's WGN. Let me read some texts. I was just telling you the story about an ad that ran in your Spanish-speaking countries. In the ad, and if you haven't seen it yet, you can see it almost anywhere online. It's at our Facebook page. It's at Bill Left and Wendy Snyder Show right there on Facebook. What you see when you see the ad is a bunch of people that just don't seem that happy. It's some Mexican workers working in their neighborhood. It seems to be kind of a poorer area of Mexico. Then all of a sudden, some kids, some scrubby white kids with really great hair, come into town, and they give these people a bottle of Coca-Cola, and all of a sudden, everybody's all smiles, everybody's in a good mood, and then they put together a nice red Christmas tree with the Coca-Cola label on it. A couple of people, and I mentioned this earlier, but I'm still getting texts saying there are plenty of people who look like that in Mexico. I don't know. These look like as California a bunch of kids as you could possibly imagine. I'm sure that those people do exist in Mexico, but I think the message was to say, here's a group of kids from America who are coming overseas to make your world better, and they have a can of Coke or a bottle of Coke for you, and everything's going to be better instantly. I think that's what you're going to see when you watch the ad. Where's the text I wanted to read? This is one from what I said about the polar bears. Hey, Bill, some polar bears like Pepsi and Dr. Pepper, and they feel left out. This is politically incorrect. Yeah, I guess you could say that. 630 says, I'm fairly all-American and have quite a few flaws. I'm also quite sullen with my job. Why can't Mexican villagers come and visit me and bring me a bottle of Coca-Cola? That would make for a joyous workspace. All right. Well, maybe. I don't know. It's possible, I guess. All right. A couple of other quick stories in the news. This one is disturbing for different reasons. This is from a newspaper in Norway. And I'm going to warn you right now. I know a lot of times kids come home from school and maybe the radio's on. This might be disturbing to a child, but it ends okay. I'll preface the story by telling you that Santa Claus, kids, is not dead. Far from it. Santa Claus is currently in the North Pole working on toys and will bring them to you if you're good. Here's the story. A newspaper in Norway is sure to be on this year's naughty list after the newspaper accidentally published a fake obituary for Father Christmas. The hoax announcement in a newspaper called Aftenposten, which I assume every newspaper in Norway is called. It just sounds like the official newspaper of Norway, Aftenposten, claimed that St. Nicholas died. This is terrible. St. Nicholas passed away at the age of 226 in the country's most northern point of Nordkap on December the 3rd. This according to a BBC report. It is also revealed in the report that his funeral was to be held at the North Pole Chapel on December the 28th. This according to the Evening Standard. His birth date, that of Santa Claus, Father Christmas, Kris Kringle, call him what you want, is given as December the 12th, 1788. But within the report of his death, no cause of death was clearly stated. It's unclear, it says right here, who created the pretend death notice or how it ended up in the publication's obituary page. However, it was later removed from the newspaper's website. This according to the website Metro.com. Norway's second largest newspaper later released a statement to apologize for the incident and said that it was reviewing its internal procedures. Aftenposten has strict guidelines for both the content and the use of symbols in their obituaries, a spokesman told the BBC. This ad, the ad that features the death, and again, kids, it's not real. Don't feel bad. Santa Claus is alive and couldn't be better. This ad is a violation of these and should not have been published. We will find out how this happened, he mentioned. All right. I'm not going to end on a sad note. Kevin, don't look at me that way. I'm not going to end on a sad note. I'm going to end on a very, very happy note. Are you ready to be happy, everybody? Listen to this. Bacon-scented underwear now exists.
Oh, that's putting a smile on my face, Bill.
How about that? We all hope that Christmas is a time of miracles. As it turns out, Christmas is a time of miracles. There is bacon-scented underwear. I will tell you more. It says here, we all love novelty underwear. Is that true? Do we all love novelty underwear?
I'm checking. Yes, we do.
I don't know. I didn't know that part was true. All right. I guess I stand to be corrected. We all, as it says in the report, we all love novelty underwear. It says, you know, the day of the week underwear. They really have that? Do they really make underwear that has the days of the week? I always thought that was like in made-for-TV movies. It says, or something emblazoned with Hercules on it to remind you of your childhood. Why would that remind you of your childhood?
I mean, that's just cool. I don't.
That's just cool, right? It has nothing to do with your childhood. But we just discovered, it says here at Huffington Post, bacon-scented underwear. It says it's not a joke. You can buy a pair of bacon-scented underwear. One pair of the underwear will set you back $19.99. Well, that's about standard for a set of underwear. Why is it sold in sets? It will keep its bacon scent for at least 6 months. I'm disappointed in that. If I buy bacon underwear, I want it to last years and years. 6 months doesn't do it for me. Depending on how you wash them or how strong you enjoy your bacon scent, it says here. But please, it says, make sure that you do wash them because this is what the sellers have to say about their product. It says this right on the label. Science tells us that 45% of Canadians prefer bacon to sex. Oh, that's upsetting. And I hope inaccurate. Could that possibly be true? That nearly half the people of Canada would rather have bacon than sex?
Canadian bacon is pretty good.
Well, all right. I'll give you that. All right. Point taken. And now, it says on the package, and now new generations of Canadian will not have to choose. Because with bacon-scented underwear, you won't know where breakfast ends and your lover starts. Is that a selling point?
I really
or
hope that's not their tagline.
It says it on the box, Kevin. It says it right there on the box. In other words, this underwear might help you score, it says. Whatever your reason for wanting underwear that smells like bacon, and I'll be honest with you, I read the story this morning at about 8 a.m. I still haven't come up with a good reason. I'm sure somebody has a reason.
Well, one reason I can think of is if you're just by default smelling worse than bacon.
Right. So. Okay. Let's take that for just a second. If your situation is such that you do smell worse than bacon, this is certainly an upgrade. Good point, Kevin. All right. So it is available. You can find it online. It has it at a place called jnds.com. I'm not familiar with that website. But if for some reason you find it in your future that you want your underwear to smell like bacon, you now have an option. Miracles do happen. All right, we'll talk to Ro and Anna, find out what they've got coming up on their show next. It's Bill Left. Wendy Snyder has the day off, and it's WGN.